now.
WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. Welcome to WRIF's award-winning Night Call, Detroit's longest-running phone-in talk show with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan. Peter and Jolene will be voicing their opinions, and they want to hear yours. Call them at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter and Jolene.
Well, thank you very much. Hi, Jolene.
Hi, Peter.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show, Detroit's most progressive political talk show, and one that stands for peace and social and economic justice.
We do, and so much more.
That doesn't sound, it sounds like Superman. What did he used to say?
You're asking the wrong person.
Yeah, something or other in the American way.
Someone out there knows
truth,
it.
Justice in the American way.
Okay.
We're there with that. 313-298-WRIF.
That sounds like a teabagger thing.
Teabagger. You know, I didn't even tell you this, but I decided I was not going to talk about these right-wing freaks at all.
Wait, you've been saying this for six weeks.
Yeah, we're going to do it.
Okay.
We are. But before, let's talk about some, anything to report, good, fun, interesting this weekend, or did you just chill? That you can talk about.
Well, I've been rescuing kittens since Tuesday. Born
next.
In my backyard, and the happy ending of the story is they all have homes.
Hey,
I've been
good.
A busy girl.
I know. You were going to bring them over to our house, which I'm going, no way.
I knew you wanted no part of that.
This will probably take all of my rock street creds right out of the game, but I saw Don Giovanni, the Mozart opera, 3 hours of singing. But this Don Giovanni is like Don Juan, and so he's seducing all these women, killing all these people, and at the end he bursts into flames.
Yeah,
so it was quite a performance. And you can actually, these days, this sounds cheap, $25 you can probably get tickets for. It's there next weekend as well. We got some rock and roll in the future, though, just to get my creds back. Let me see. What's the name of this band? Jolene Jordan and the Dusty Picks.
I've heard of them.
I've heard of them, right. So Jolene's band, the Dusty Picks, the D. Kroll Band, and a band called Free Beer. We got to emphasize, it's the band's name, not what you can expect at the venue. It's a May Day celebration for the Fifth Estate magazine. You can go to fifthestate.org to see what that crazy publication is all about.
You said it.
And it's May Day, so that's May 1st. And we've rescued the holiday from the authoritarian socialists who tried to make it into some, I don't know what. But traditionally, it's been an international workers' holiday as well as a pagan day of celebration for the coming of spring.
Yes.
And a new wrinkle this time. It's the day that smoking ends in Michigan bars, so we can breathe freely once again, those of us who don't want to inhale your cigarette. We appreciate the sharing. I mean, this is very communal, very communistic, mm-hmm. and all that. But in this case, we don't want to share it.
No. And it's at the New Way Bar in Ferndale.
Yeah.
Did you already say that?
No.
Okay. And listen, my friend Tina. Hey, Tina. Hey, everyone at the New Way. Great friend of mine. Spent much time there, played there a lot. And a smoky bar. So on May 1st, I am looking forward to it.
That's competing with the Royal Oak Bar, Gasoline Alley, where I always thought you were required to smoke if you went in there.
Pretty much. Well, you are because you're...
Yeah. What are those folks going to do? They make out all right in other cities.
They'll be fine. It'll be just fine.
So you can go to my website, Peter Werby, W-E-R-B-E. .com, and you can actually I had it at the top, but I had a few other things about that massacre that was caught on tape. U.S. military confirms that they showed that video of those Apache helicopters killing those journalists, and thinking, hey, nice, that's one of them said when they saw it. Also, that funeral in South Africa, South Africa's teabaggers,
they're everywhere.
I can't remember what's the man's first name. That was Eugene Terre Blanche, which means, how is your French?
Not so good.
Yeah, white ground or white land. That's what it means.
Oh, my gosh.
Terre, a land, blanche, blank.
Sure.
Yeah. Nazi salutes and swastikas as hundreds gather for funeral of murdered white supremacist Eugene Terre Blanche. Well, as we say in the Motor City, paybacks are MFs. because these folks sure did a number on the black people of South Africa in Totoro, whereas apparently what happened here was just two black farm workers were PO'd because a guy was trying to rip them off, and they just did a little, farm worker justice.
This was a disturbing article to see.
It was. In fact, it says their arms raised in a Nazi salute, thousands of angry white followers greet the coffin of Eugene Terre Blanche as it leaves the church. Children, even babies, were dressed in the uniform of 69-year-old Terre Blanche, part of the AWB. All white babies? What does AWB stand for? I don't know. It doesn't say. That's bad journalism.
It does now.
Yeah. And that's on my website, too. And they have a flag that looks like a Nazi flag.
It does. And isn't that what's draped?
On the coffin.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, so at first I said I was not going to talk about these teabaggers, the right-wingers.
Or Sarah Palin.
It's just calamitous. You know, it's all this noise. I mean, Shakespeare's line. But it may be more than that, you know. Sound and fury signifying nothing. I mean, it does, I think, signifying something. And here, I want to read you some quotes, get a little music in the back of it.
Oh, these are good.
And I don't want to give their names. Or do you think I should? Is it all out there? You know, most of them.
I think it's all out there.
All right, so here, we'll get the music going. Newt Gingrich. Barack Obama is the most radical president ever. Rush Limbaugh, Obama inflicting untold damage on this great country. Mark Levin, who calls himself Levin for some reason. Closest thing to a dictator we've ever had. Palin, Obama's vast nuclear experience he acquired as a community organizer. Liz Cheney, not the gay one, not the gay daughter. Whoa. Obama putting America on the path to decline. Sean Hannity, Obama is a socialist. Michael Wiener, I won't even give his real name, a savage, Obama the Destroyer.
I bet Wiener and Boner are buddies.
Yeah, they are. Boner, who is the minority leader in the...
He's something.
What's his first name?
John.
John Boner, right. Yeah. Well, first off, I don't even know where to approach this. Let's go down these. Obama's the most radical president ever. Well, I don't know what he's done other than have this pretty tepid... by the way, if you want to join us, 313-298-WRIF, and you can comment on some of these. The most radical president ever. Well, I would say he was beat out by Franklin Roosevelt, who put in Social Security and the eight-hour day and had the government hire millions of people and all of this stuff.
Like ending slavery, things like that. I mean, he's done things. He's done with health care what...
Who ended slavery?
No, I'm talking back in the day when slavery was ending.
Yeah, so that... Well...
George W. Bush.
Yeah. So after Andrew Johnson, the president, after Lincoln, and then U.S. Grant, he could have been more radical. They had what they called radical reconstruction in the South, where they put in, they allowed African Americans for the first time to vote, and in some cases made up the majority of state legislatures, like in Mississippi and South Carolina, and they had black governors back in the... So that's truly radical.
Truly amazing.
Okay. So he's definitely... not the most radical
president. So I would say, though, throw that out.
Yeah, I wish.
What is so radical about Barack Obama? Please tell us if you think he is radical.
No, I wish he was the most radical president.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Bring it.
In terms of the health care, that was had been proposed by Harry Truman and Richard Nixon as well. So it's not very radical. So Rush Limbaugh says he's inflicting untold damage on this great country. Well, it seems like it began under Bush, didn't it? But okay, we'll just leave it at that. Mark Levin, who calls himself Levin for some odd reason.
What is your whole point here?
Yeah, I don't know.
He doesn't want to be identified as a Jewish person?
I think so.
Okay, yeah, that's what I thought you were getting.
Yeah, I thought I was going to leave that as a subtext for only those that could figure it.
Okay.
So he says, the closest thing to a dictator we've ever had. Again, that would probably have to go to Abraham Lincoln, who suspended the writ of habeas corpus during World War II.
George W. Bush.
George W. Bush, Roosevelt, who in turn Japanese, and
that's pretty bad.
And during World War One, with the most egregious assault on civil liberties ever in the history of this country, Woodrow Wilson. So he's not the closest thing.
How quickly we forget these idiots?
Palin's just a total idiot who knows nothing about nothing. We don't want to take her thing. Liz Cheney, Obama's putting America on path to decline. Folks, I got to tell you, it's been in decline, and it was exacerbated under Bush. Hannity, Obama is a socialist. I wish he was. He's not.
Because he absolutely is not.
What else has he... Let's even say that this health care plan, which, I mean, you got to have the government really... You got to have, like, Medicare. Like, Medicare is a socialized...
socialized
program.
Medicine.
Yeah,
program.
Socialized medicine. Medicare is. But this thing, it's a big giveaway to these big private medical corporations. And Ron Paul... said the libertarian, the representative from Texas, said he is not. Okay, hey, Paulists, or whatever you call yourself, he said he is not a socialist, he is a corporatist. And that is that his policy is dictated by, formed by privileges, the corporations.
Yes.
Hello?
He's trying to say he's not.
who began who began the country? A lot of guys, kind of the big corporatists.
Well, true, yeah.
Yeah. And... Michael Weiner, friend of John Boehner.
They're good buddies.
I don't know, these guys are so wet. I won't even... He's scary. But, all right, so here's the problem. These guys are riling up the far right wing edge of the Republican Party, which is all there really is any longer. There's not even moderates to speak of any longer. So they want. I don't know what these teabaggers want. They're just frothing. They're these crazed hordes that are just like these. Tara Blanche's party in South Africa, see what what they once thought was this rock-solid vision of America is beginning to slip away. Well, it began to slip away a long time ago. It had nothing to do with Obama.
Yeah, really.
It had nothing to do with changing demographics. In many ways, it had to do with the corporatists who began to deindustrialize this, first our state in the 1950s. It's been going on for half a century. And then finally, when the internationalism of or the internationalization of industrial production, globalization.
You know what, Peter, I was thinking about with the teabaggers, and this may inflame a few people. It wouldn't be the first time, but is not the 4th of July going to be so nauseating this year with these people?
Oh, the baggers, you mean?
Yeah, the powdered wigs are coming out.
Yeah, that's okay.
Maybe a few cannons.
So all of these guys that I mentioned, the Levins and the Limbaughs and the Gingriches, and what they really want, here's their goal. They don't want to retake back our country. They don't want to restore the Constitution. They don't want to roll back health care. That is way down the line. What they want is to get their edge of the racket, their end of the racket, the Republican Party back in power. That's essentially what it's all about. What they are inflaming down in the ranks.
Yeah, they're doing the same thing.
So why is the left, and by the way, this is a chimera? Is that it? Chimera? This is, a ghost left. They have to create this left president who isn't, who's a center-rightist, not even a center-leftist, not even a centrist.
He's like Bill Clinton light? Or Bill Clinton.
Dark.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Or that.
Yeah. Right. But in any event, in Europe, in periods of economic distress, when fascism arose, where the same social base and the same sort of mentality, this ferocious anger took place on the right, it was in both in this period of economic uncertainty and social chaos, but there was also this very, very strong left in Europe. In all the countries where fascism came to be, in Europe, particularly in Spain and Italy.
How'd that go for them?
The Thousand-Year Reich, I guess that only lasted 12 years. Took a few people down with them, though, didn't it? But
sure did.
there's no left like contesting for power. I mean, in Spain or in Italy, in Germany, there was this huge communist and socialist movement. In Spain, there was this enormous anarchist movement. Mm-hmm. And so the fascism essentially was engineered and supported by the corporatist, if you will, of those countries, the ruling class, in order as a defense guard against the left. Well, there's no left. I mean, there is a left, but we are doing is trying to stop a few wars, get in some health care and all that. I mean, that's no, you know, no big thing. But the liberals have the people they wanted in office. So you got I said he was a center rightist, but for, you know, who appears as a liberal. They have the Democratic Party, which appears to be liberal. So what is the goal of liberals? You know what I mean? The Republicans want to get the racket back under their control. The liberals already have it. So they don't have anywhere to go. I mean, they're just got their... you can't say that, can you? Never mind.
No, you can't.
And what it's really bringing about, and this always happens in periods of economic distress, you start having all this millenarian stuff, end of times, and so you had this Hutari group and all that.
Uh-huh.
And man, people have had...
Michigan, the guys in,
No. In Michigan, not the Michigan movies. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they've made them out to be, you know, I don't know what, like something like Hitler's brown shirts. I mean, apparently they were planning some pretty bad stuff, but it was really Cuckoosville.
Oh, completely.
And one of the things, so they really hated the government, and the first thing they did when they got arrested, they asked for...
representation.
Public defenders,
right.
Paid for by you and me. You know, I think about these guys. You know, the Michigan militia disassociated themselves from these far-out guys, the Hutari. But can you imagine if liberals or left-wingers put together an armed militia, started getting uniforms, and started training in the Michigan woods?
How long, black gloves and things?
Yes. How long do you think that would last?
not for more than, well, till they got caught, and it'd be real quick.
Yeah, yeah. Whereas these right-wing militias are allowed to just go about their deal. What about if African Americans decided we're gonna have an armed militia that's gonna train in Michigan? You understand that?
Right, just to back up, you know, the emergency folks and the police when there's a big disaster.
Yeah.
They can be there.
Yeah. I mean, this is amazing. And so what they've created, what these politicians, these really unscrupulous liars have created, this is a situation we were talking about yesterday where they've created in a section of the public, and not a great amount, less than would appear from what you see these folks on television all the time, because, you know, they're good... they're good press, or what would you call it?
Good media. Yeah.
Because if you have sexy media. If you have liberals or leftists saying, yes, I think we need universal single-payer health care, or you say, whoa, that's real exciting.
Yeah, blah, blah, blah,
so
blah, blah,
get,
right.
But so they've created the Obama derangement syndrome. Remember we were talking about that?
Yeah.
So it was 2 weeks. We were not on last week, were we?
We were not on, and we didn't know that we were not going to be on.
No atheists on Easter, please.
But they really didn't.
No, they didn't.
But we like to joke about it.
Yeah. I went into our program director. I said, do you want a couple of atheists on Easter? He said, why don't you guys stick them?
Yeah, take the night off. Go ahead.
I think you might do it. But so 57% of Republicans believe that Obama is a Muslim. 45% of Republicans agree with the birthers in their belief that Obama was not born in the U.S. and not eligible to be president. 38% of Republicans say that Obama is doing many of the things that Hitler did. And 24% of say that Obama may be the Antichrist.
These people are just simply disturbed.
Yeah. So what? But it's easy to say, and it's easy to laugh at them. It's easy to be contemptuous of them, all of which I do.
Yeah, but you're not having compassion now, are you?
I have compassion in the Buddhist sense, that they've moved far away from their Buddha nature, and hence are probably pretty miserable.
Yeah.
And they're frightened, and they're angry, and they're just filled with these negative emotions. They have these dreams of restoring this America that never really was.
Well, and the way they're going about it is really not effective whatsoever.
Yeah.
You know, when you're throwing bricks through buildings and...
Oh, well, I don't even know if I want to put that all on them. But you know what? I don't want to put that on the teabaggers so much, but I do want to put it on these, you know, on the Gingriches and Limbaughs and Levins and Palins.
Oh, those cats. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because they've stirred everybody up. I mean,
they sure have.
They take these people and said that your country is at risk, that you're, you know, that this tepid bill that doesn't even really address the medical problems of so many people, this stuff is not even going to happen for years and years.
Yeah.
And tell them that, you know, that we're going to be like moving into a communist dictatorship.
I mean, they should just be ashamed of themselves.
In fact, I don't know if I can.
Once again, how do these people sleep at night?
Easy. Well, all the people that I mentioned are millionaires.
Well, that's a good point.
Right. So that's easy for them.
Sure.
I mean there's essentially the cannon fodder. The people that follow them are the suckers because they have no interest in them whatsoever other than just that. Cannon fodder to get their rich buddies back in in office. Yeah. You know? So all right, I was looking for something that doesn't seem to come up. Let me see if I can, while I'm looking, wow, yeah, it was an incredible game with the Tigers today. One in the bottom of the ninth. Sex offenders. Where are these people?
Are you giving us? Are you giving sports reports now?
Are we on the air? Oh yeah, sorry.
Would you like to give the weather?
Yeah, but here. This is. I think this is the one I was looking for. But there. I don't know. This. I don't know if this is the one I was looking for. But the team. Bag Express was in Lansing, so this one doesn't show all the signs. But
oh, amazing how I missed that.
Yeah, they were, you know, talking about, you know, we got to get the commies out of office. The commies?
For real.
If anybody's talking about the commies, they're probably old enough, and, you know, opposing government aid, they're probably old enough to be getting Social Security and Medicare.
Yeah, so, you know, what? You don't need that, right?
Right.
Yeah. Turn it away.
So here's one of the things that happened is that we have a situation where one of the Supreme Court justices is going to retire. And
John Paul Stevens.
John Paul Stevens, indeed. The head of the liberal bloc, although he's Republican, he was nominated by a Michigander, President Gerald Ford, the guy who ignominiously pardoned the criminal president, or criminal Republican president, Richard Nixon.
So the fact that he's leaving really could be a good thing for the left.
Well, except that rather than putting somebody in there who would balance the total far right wing justices Thomas and Scalia and sort of just the ordinary garden variety right wingers Chief Justice Roberts and Associate Justice Alito, they're going to put in somebody just sort of tepid and what have you. In fact, the GOP senators said that he must pick someone with mainstream judicial views, and they never did. And the Democrats just go along with it. They voted for all these right wingers. And so you would think, I mean, in order to balance it, you'd have to have a judge with the politics that I have to balance out, like Thomas and Scalia. And I don't think there are any federal judges with politics like mine. What do you mean?
No, I don't think there are.
Yeah. No, there's not. So. All right, so, Brock, come on, get some cojones, man, and put somebody in there that'll send the Republicans up the wall, if for no other reason to get a fair balance on that court. Certainly, don't get someone who is to the right of retiring Justice Stevens.
Absolutely not.
All right, the other nutball thing that the right is going off on is this, two things. One is this treaty that the United States signed with Russia, and also that the nuclear arms, and also that President Obama is revamping American nuclear strategy, which would narrow the conditions under which the United States would use nuclear weapons. So the right wing said, He's disarming us. You know, he's,
oh,
he's
really,
weak.
They're going crazy about this.
Absolutely going crazy. Well, it's absolutely crazy. In some ways, he's doing the opposite, because one article here from, I guess, just Yahoo News, Obama's new nuclear plan leaves missiles on hair triggers. Did you know this, folks? Did you know this was even in operation, that his new nuclear posture review is being hailed as a common-sense acknowledgement that in the modern age, nuclear proliferation and nuclear terrorism are of greater concern than an apocalyptic battle between superpowers, blah, blah, blah. Anyways. And, by the way, Palin said nuclear. Well, how do you say that?
She said nuclear.
Nuclear.
She sure did.
Yeah, because she likes Bush. She got did you see Tina Fey, by the way, on said?
I didn't, but I will check it out on YouTube.
Go to buzzflash.com.
Oh, is it on there?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Yeah. She said she got the silver medal in the 2008 election.
Did you watch the whole thing?
Yeah.
Was it fabulous?
Yeah. What? Maybe the
Tina Fey.
Yeah.
I love her.
But it says in this article, the review, that the nuclear posture review doesn't recommend any change in the alert status of our nuclear arsenal. That leaves over 2,000 American and Russian nuclear weapons ready to launch on a few minutes' notice, a dangerous legacy of the Cold War, which has been over for like 20 years, right? And not only puts about 100 million of us in potential less than an hour away from annihilation any moment, but all hugely increases the risk of a mistaken launch of a weapon falling into the hands of terrorists. So in other words, that President Obama has done nothing to get us off this razor's edge, where we have about 1,000 nuclear missiles aimed at us. Us, I mean very distinctly, us, like where we're sitting here in
and
the WR.
And it's not just now. They haven't been aimed at us. Bush. Right.
Yeah. So the idea is that from these right-wing idiots, because, I mean, they're idiots because they don't either, I mean, they're mostly lying, I think, or they couldn't possibly misunderstand this badly.
A little bit of brainwashing going on somewhere.
Purposeful or purposeful ignorance or something. But
or paranoia.
Why is Russia our enemy? Or why does anyone see Russia as a potential enemy?
Yeah.
Or China?
Why aren't we over there?
Yeah, China is reducing its arms expenditure.
Mm-hmm.
Russia does not have a lot of money, so it's not upgrading it. Barack Obama, for all you hawks and people that drool about the thought of being in a world with nuclear weapons on a hair trigger, is now asking for $10 billion, first time that threshold of $10 billion has been passed, to develop a new generation of nuclear weapons. This is not George Bush, people. This is Barack Obama.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm surprised in many ways that the right isn't happier with Barack Obama.
For this?
Yeah.
Exactly.
And for a lot of other things.
Well, they're not
going to
give them anything, really.
Let's see. U.S. developing new non-nuclear missiles. This is from the Washington Post. As the White House pushes for cuts in the U.S. nuclear arsenal, the Pentagon is developing a weapon to help fill the gap. Missiles armed with conventional weapons that could strike anywhere in the world in less than an hour. So it doesn't sound like he's disarming us. U.S. military officials say the ICBMs, the intercontinental ballistic missiles, known as prompt global strike weapons, are a necessary new form of deterrence against terrorist networks and other adversaries. Oh, yeah, you can always threaten them because, you know, they're not, they would be frightened like hell if they thought they were going to die after they struck at us, right?
Well, yeah.
No.
Oh.
They don't seem to fear that.
No, they're not afraid at all.
Yeah, as envisioned, the conventional missiles would give the White House a fresh military option to consider in a crisis that would not result in a radioactive mushroom cloud. So, in other words, that Barack Obama is upping the war ante. Why, again, we would see China or Russia as a potential enemy, and if we do, why don't we make a peace treaty with them, a non-aggression pact? Why don't we say, hey, Russia, we're not going to attack you. I know you're kind of paranoid about the West having been invaded three times by the West over the last couple hundred years, and I know you know that the United States had plans for an invasion and occupation of the Soviet Union, whereas the Soviet Union never had any plans to attack Western Europe or the United States. And I know that that Russia feels pretty paranoid now because the United States is surrounding Russia once again with missiles and bases in Afghanistan, Iraq, Poland all this stuff. But why don't we make a peace treaty? Why don't we say, hey, let's be friends. Let's cooperate. Let's sign something that says not only are we not going to ever fight, but we're going to reduce our nuclear arsenals next to nothing. Hey, China, how about us the same thing? And they go, hey, it's all right. We don't have anything going. Besides, we own you. We're not going to attack you.
How about a big tree hugging ceremony?
Yeah, why would we attract you, U.S.? We're China. We own you. So you're one of our assets. All of your people are working their butts off, so we can pay on the loans that you took out under George Bush as for debt service. So they're not going to do anything. Also, let's see, Peter Fever, who wrote this piece in the New York Times on April 9th, said, this is the key sentence from the Nuclear Posture Review. The United States will not use or threaten to use nuclear weapons against non-nuclear weapon states that are party to nuclear proliferation, non-proliferation treaty and in compliance with the nuclear non-proliferation obligation, which says almost nothing. So I guess what they're saying, if Mexico or Sudan or Colombia, something like that, hit us with poison gas or something like that, we would not nuke them. We would only destroy them with these global, whatever the hell they were, prime global strike weapons. I mean, so this is, I don't even know why the big deal was made about this. In some ways, it's even worse. This apparently walks away from a Bush-era declaration that underscored the possibility the United States might use nuclear weapons if it suffered a chemical or biological attack. Instead, the Obama administration is saying it will respond to chemical or biological assaults only with a devastating conventional military response. What a wimp.
Oh, Peter.
The administration's defenders have promoted this as a bold step in fulfilling the president's commitment to reducing the role of nuclear weapons in national security. Critics see it as a reckless act of self-constraint. But
I think he's trying to get the righties to like him, but no one's budging for this guy.
Uh-uh. But there is less here than meets the eye. First, under the declaration, America still threatens to use nuclear weapons against nuclear states that are party to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, read Russia and China, if they hit us with a nuclear weapon or with a chemical, biological, or cyber attack. Now, why in the world would China or Russia attack us?
Exactly.
I mean, it's insane to think they even would. I got it. You know, comrade, launch missiles. We will be wiped out ourselves, we will.
These guys have played too much. What's that game? Is it
Risk.
Risk. They play way too much risk.
Except we're the ones at risk.
Yeah, exactly.
Third, the new doctrine clearly implies the United States reserves the right to threaten to use nuclear weapons against the states that are not party to the non-proliferation treaty, which is Iran, North Korea, and Syria. Reduces the number, but still huge. Why are China and Russia considered enemies? Well, we talked about it. Dwight Eisenhower had the same policy, and one final thing. Hey, by the way.
Yeah,
someone is joining us. I was going to say, we haven't had any callers yet. 313-298-WRIF. So here's what I'm saying. Maybe you want to comment on this. Barack Obama, the farthest left he's ever gotten is to the center. Ultimately, like Bill Clinton, he's a center rightist. And that shows you how the political climate in this country is so far skewed to the right. But this just came. You know what? We have to take a break. Let's do that, and we'll be right back. But indeed, call us during the break.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julian Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Julian will be taking more of your calls right after this.
Win big at the casino?
Nope, better than that. I just got a great deal at MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
Ah, yes, MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com, the online connection to half off or more deals from tons of Metro Detroit businesses.
I always look there first. They're the best bet for online coupons and discounts.
This week, MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com is featuring Mill Street Grill in Pontiac, Red Pepper Deli in Northville, Dan Good Pizza in Shelby Township, Sterling Heights in New Baltimore, and Aesop's in Sterling Heights.
Jackpot! Nobody beats MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
Deal yourself a winning hand. Save time and money by shopping from the comfort of your own home when you connect to amazing deals like these and more at MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
Summer nights. A week in Jamaica. Sunday on the couch.
Sipping McDonald's new McCafe real fruit smoothies? One can't help but think really good thoughts.
New car every year? Boss out of town. Kung Fu movie marathon.
Bananas blended with creamy, low-fat yogurt in strawberry banana or wild berry.
Girlfriend who likes golf.
Get a small smoothie for just $2.29. Prices, participation, and duration may vary.
It all starts with having a good, pre-screened group of contractors to choose from. And Hire It Done is your one-stop guide to finding the one that's right for your home improvement project. Hi, I'm Adam Helfman, host of WRIF's Hire It Done. Before you start your day's home improvement tasks around your house, grab a cup of hot coffee and tune us in Saturday mornings from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Join us this weekend. They're here, those pesky carpenter ants. We'll help you get their homes out of your home's walls. Are your gutters clear for optimal performance? And your attic, what's really going on up there? Also, spring is moving season. Hire It Done gives you the do's and don'ts for a successful home transition. Plus, we'll discuss the latest in short sales. If you know someone who's upside down on their mortgage, you need to tune into my show this Saturday where I have Will Elias, the short sale expert at 877-CALL-WILL, and he's going to discuss everything you need to know about short sales and the latest news on loan modifications. Plus, I'll take your house calls live. All this Saturday beginning at 7 a.m. on Hire It Done and 101 WRIF, The Riff.
Hire It Done. Back with more Night Call. 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
All right, thank you very much. Welcome back to this segment. Some open lines for you. First thing we were talking about is the over-the-top criticism of the far righties, the psycho whack jobs.
And you know, the far righties?
What did I say?
Well, you said of. They're criticizing.
Yeah. You know what I hate about these far right-wing whack job idiots?
They always call people names. Everything. Oh, yeah, I hear you. Okay. Those idiots.
Yeah.
Why can't they quit name calling?
So they called Gingrich called Obama the most radical president ever. We said no.
I wish.
Mark Levin said he's the closest thing to the dictator we've ever had. We said no. We don't even mention Palin. She's so dumb. Liz Cheney, the non-gay daughter, said the Obama put America on the path to decline. Obama's a socialist, says Hannity. That's refuted by Ron Paul. And I don't know. Some of this is just, I don't know. You know, Michael Weiner, who's a friend of John Boehner, says Obama is the destroyer. So you think any of that's true? Here's Mark. Mark, hey, you're on the air. Welcome to the broadcast. Mark, are you with us?
Hello, Mark.
Where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Abe, actually.
Hi, Abe.
Hi, how you doing?
Great.
Yeah. Where are you calling from, Abe?
Guys, I'm on the road, actually. I'm in Troy.
Okay.
I just headed to Rochester. I just touched the radio and you guys are on. I love the topic. I love the, it's nice and raw. You guys are saying it as it is.
We tend to do that here.
Yeah.
And that's what I appreciate, you know, and I wish you guys, would record what you're saying and play it during the day and let more people hear it. You know, I mean, the topics you're saying, I mean, it's just not enough people realize how much truth you guys are speaking and, what you're saying is just so simple. It's the truth. It's common sense.
Well, you know, let me just tell you this, Abe. For one thing, WRIF is a rock and roll station, so that's going to be happening during the day. But this is available as a podcast and will be so done by noon tomorrow.
On Monday, Monday.
So you go to WRIF.com, you go to the podcast. And
for Night Call.
For Night Call, and there it is.
I'll be sure to download it and check it out.
Spread the news.
And you can subscribe and they'll just send it to you. Yeah.
Anytime I get a chance, I try to at least get a recording of it, like on my cell phone, you know, just to listen to it today, especially when it's, you know, real juicy topics, you know?
Yeah, sure. You know, technology, you can now do that, too. You can now download that on your phone.
Guys, one thing that I really appreciated you guys talking about is the way that about when you were mentioning about the game of risk and whatnot, and you know, that's something that most people don't think about, especially the right wing conservatives. I mean, they're sitting there talking about how our country's so unsafe now than it was, what, 8 years ago?
Uh-huh.
Or just a couple years ago. It drives me nuts to think about how, you know, when Clinton left office, I mean, he addressed his political agenda. Of course, every president is going to do that, you know, and more power to him. But we had a surplus. Everybody loved us.
Yeah.
And out of the blue, what happens? War. And it's non-justified. Patriot Act comes into place. All these different things. And, you know, it drives me nuts about the right-wingers. They're standing up and saying, no, we're right. We're protecting the country. Yet what they did is they made it even weaker. And
yeah, I think that certainly Bush weakened the country on every level, including putting the country in hock to foreign banks.
And we're talking for generations to come.
Yeah, but hey, but here, this is what Joe from Farmington Hills wrote. He said, Obama is the most radical president ever. For instance, somebody needs to tell these Republicans that the U.S. stock market has gone up an unprecedented 40% in the last year. Never in U.S. history has that happened. So much for Obama and his socialist system, right? I hadn't thought about that because, of course, you know, under Bush, it hit the deck. You know, look at what it almost dropped, I think 50%. Yeah, it dropped 50% under Bush. And, you know, here, what's been done brought it back up.
Yeah, exactly. And think about it like this. Clinton left office with surplus. Bush took it down. And here's the thing. They're putting down Obama. He took over a wrecked country. I mean, the country had a salvage title, let's put it that way, if you're a car buyer. The country had a salvage title, for example. You know what I mean?
Kind of what?
Obama did.
If a salvage title, if you're a car guy. Oh, I'm a car gal.
Okay.
So. I'm just talking about, like, comparing it to a car, you know. Obama took over a wrecked country. It was like...
Absolutely.
You know, I was praying all day, all night, that the next president that comes in, male, female, goat, whatever gets voted in, it doesn't matter to me about the color of the skin or where they're from or their religion, all that mumbo jumbo, as if it matters. What matters is if they're qualified, what they have in their heart, too, because...
It's because you have a brain, and you know what? Praying ain't going to help. I hate to be so cynical.
All right, hey, listen, get back to driving. We always say drive now, talk later.
And
thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks.
Call again.
We got, let's see, Marion Livonia says Obama should nominate Judge Joe Brown. That's okay.
I love that show.
He seems fair.
Yeah, he is firm but fair.
Firm but fair. That's who we need. He ought to, you know. Yeah. You may remember 2-3 weeks ago in this article about the world's billionaires from Forbes, it said most plutocrats, which I was surprised they used that phrase. That's the wealthy. That's like a 100-year-old phrase. They used to use that to criticize impacted wealth 100 years ago. Of course, that's the same situation we have again. He said, indeed, last year's wealth wasteland has become a billionaire bonanza. Most of the richest people on the planet have seen their fortunes soar in the past year. Think about our fortunes. Think about the value of your house. Think about the 401k.
Hey, let's talk about the massive increase in assistance, like bridge cards, which for those outside of Michigan, yeah. That's food stamps. I mean, on and on, Peter.
Right? I should just play this, but every time I just play this, you jump out of your seat.
Okay, well, thanks.
Eat the rich, out of the palace, into the ditch. We should play the Aerosmith, Eat the Rich.
You've been saying that for like 10 years.
No, we have it here.
We have it somewhere.
Anyway, pay of hedge fund managers roared back last year. Everybody knows what hedge funds are, right? Let me explain.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Something to do with a little furry animal that's kind of...
Yeah, you need a shears. But anyway,
right.
The recovery of the nation's big banks didn't just benefit bankers. It also created huge paydays for hedge fund managers, including a record $4 billion gain in 2009. For one bold investor who bet big on the financial sector. So this is from the New York Times, so they're thinking this guy's just totally cool. It's a man named David Tepper, and he bet on the country's revival. His investors did not do badly either. Mr. Tepper's flagship fund gained more than 130% last year. Again, think what happened to your 401k, and then think about this guy. His fund went up 130%. Ooh. George Soros was number two. He earned $3.3 billion in fees and investment gains. The earnings of the top 25 fund managers in the 2008 survey tumbled 50% from 2007. So just went down. But in a startling comeback, top hedge fund managers rode the 2009 stock market rally to record gains, with the highest paid 25 earning a collective $25.3 billion, according to the survey, beating the old 2007 high by a wide margin. Now, you can say, well, it's $1 billion apiece, except it didn't pan out like that. The minimum individual payout on the list was $350 million in 2009. This is what one man, I assume, probably all men, a sign of how richly compensated top hedge fund managers have remained despite public outrage over the pay packages at big banks and brokerage firms. That's why we say ETR, eat the rich. And so what do they do with their money? I mean, you can't do, if you get that kind of money, I mean, you can't consume anymore. So it's kind of just like a game, another one of these games. How much you got? I got $3 billion. Well, I got $3.6 billion. Ah, yeah, I know a guy got $45 billion. Senor Slim, the richest man in the world.
Yes.
More than Bill Gates. He's got $53.5 billion. Oh, Bill's only got $53 billion.
That's a load of money.
So you know what I say? Confiscate it all. Leave them with... This is communist stuff.
You really are. You're really getting commie on me.
Leave them with $500 million. see what you can buy with that, pal.
There goes that evil little laugh of yours, Peter.
We're throwing you down the economic drain, buddy.
And what would he do to you?
I don't know.
If he could.
Yeah. But here's some of it. Well, you know, they go out to fancy places, you know, where dinners, where they have bottles of wine that are like $135. I was at a dinner with rich people one time.
We did that once.
We did?
Oh, yes, we did, Peter.
Where?
Out in California.
Remember? Where was your husband and my wife there? Was it just like you and I?
It was you and I doing our little political tour.
Yeah.
Remember?
With like David that time?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't pay for it.
So don't think you're better than these people, because you had $135 wine.
I was at a dinner with Richie Rich Kid, a bunch of Richie Rich Kids.
Yeah, when
in
was
New
it?
York.
Oh,
a year or two ago.
Yeah.
And they were just going on about how they could get this wine now for $65 a bottle, because it was, you know, that they were just
so good.
Sometimes drinking it. They said, "How do you like the wine?" I said, "Oh, it's pretty good." It's, you know. I said, "What is it?" And they tell me, I'm going, "Oh, it's really good. We were paying like $90. Now we can get it for $60. And so I promptly drank up about $50 or $60 worth.
Okay, did the same thing in Santa Cruz.
Well, I'm a wine connoisseur.
Yeah.
The kind of sewer you can pour cheap wine down.
Exactly.
Yeah. So one of the things they do, they go to clubs. There's a club in West Hollywood called the Voyeur. The Voyeur.
And where? The Voyeur.
The Voyeur, yeah. And
this is a good one.
It's often used by high rollers, couples, and celebrities as hangout spots to see, be seen, and, well, see a lot more. And in Los Angeles, strip clubs are often at the crossroads of acting, modeling, and a job that pays the bills. At the Voyeur, the outdoor stucco walls are white and silver. The chairs inside are plush. The bar is lined with black leather. The prices are high, $2,000 a table just for drinks. Well, this is the swells, right? And
what do you get to watch, though, Peter?
You get to watch
lesbian bondage.
Really? Where did you see the lesbian there?
This is this Republican group, right?
Well, they go there. They spent a couple grand there.
Yeah, they recreate lesbian bondage on stage.
Yeah, they have.
There's nothing wrong with that. Who paid for it?
Did you?
The Republican National Committee.
Wait a minute, folks. No one out there. None of you. Like, contributed to the Republican National Committee, did you?
Because, look where your dollars are going.
They went to see a half-naked girl hanging from a net across the ceiling.
She was, flying in her leather.
Yeah. Man, I could... They said, let's see, the owners and managers, young, good-looking, and a little cranky, lolling on a velvet couch. We catered to a high-end, A-list clientele with live art installations with a voyeuristic theme. Eat the rich is what I say.
Now, you know, that was a great story. And everyone at first was trying to say that RNC chairman Michael Steele was actually there. And it got, but then they came out and said, no, it was just his organization that paid. Now, you all go have a good time over there. Little lesbo bondage. No problem.
Well, I don't know how this segues into this horrible mining disaster.
It doesn't.
Well, it does if you start thinking about Republicans and going back to the theme of why these Republican operatives, the one whose names we all know, the talk show host, the politicians, the woman who won the silver medal in the 2008 elections and all that.
SP?
Yeah, they want to get Republicans back in office. Well, when the Republicans were in office, you have a mine safety board, and George W. Bush very nicely put in a lobbyist from the Mine Owners Association. Now, the miners have the United Mine Workers, but all of the mines aren't union. In fact, this one at which the Massey, the one owned by the Massey Energy Company, that was non-union. And any miner has the right, a group of miners, to say, look, I think there's a safety concern here. They can call in federal.
Yeah. But does it ever make any difference?
Well, it does sometimes, but you're much, much more apt to do it if you have your union behind you. I mean, you get fearful if you're it's you against your employees, a single individual. If you have a group of employees mm-hmm. that have a contractual relationship with your employer, well, then you have a lot more clout, to be sure. And non-union mines have a much, much higher accident rate than the union mines. But
not surprising.
I think most people know that there were all these citations against this Massey and all of these mines for that Massey owns in Logan County, West Virginia, for instance, some of the other ones as well. It says, after the Arakoma Coal Company, a subsidiary of Massey, agreed to pay $4.2 million in criminal fines and civil penalties and to plead guilty to several safety violations. Over the years, Massey has accumulated a long record of violations and fines for its coal mining operations. Now, you would say, is this any way to do business? Why in the world wouldn't, I mean, they're getting fined millions. Well, it's pretty obvious that to put in the safety features that would stop the violations would cost them more. So essentially, it's involved in Murder Incorporated. So why has Massey contributed tens of millions of dollars to the Republican Party? Oh, because they want to take our country back. Oh, because they want to reduce the, you know, the size of government. What they want is they want to have less safety oversight. That's what they're paying for. This is an investment. This is a criminal firm investing in a criminal political party that would jeopardize the lives of ordinary working people who they don't care about at all. And I don't know, I would hope that these miners all voted Republican. West Virginia.
Wait, that they all voted Republican?
I'm not even sure what I said, but
said Republican.
I hope they all voted Democrat.
Okay, there we go.
But I was going to say that they voted, the state of West Virginia voted Republican in the 2008 election.
Right.
And I would hope that it wasn't these miners, certainly the miners in the United Mine Workers, that did this. Because if they did, they were voting to cut their own throats.
Right. And if they did, they probably said, well, we have to vote for them because they're going to keep us in our positions.
And besides, what was the guy's name? McCain, right. I was thinking McLean. That's somebody else. Never mind. Anyway, let's get one call in. Here's John in Warren. John, it's Peter and Jolene. Thanks for calling. Hey.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I'd like to touch base on what the guy said back. I think his name was Abe. He was talking about how the country, Alabama, came into a wrecked country.
Yeah.
He did.
All right, well, past mistakes that Bush had made was that he tried running two wars at once, Iraq and Afghanistan. And he started working.
And wait. And reduced taxes on the wealthy so that he cut out something like $1 trillion worth of revenue. So that he's trying to run wars and reduce taxes for the rich. Not a good idea. So now we're in debt.
Indeed. well, we're about $1.73 trillion into debt, I think the number was.
Yeah.
But anyhow, he tried running two wars, which was completely oblivious. He shouldn't have tried that because we didn't have the money for it.
Right.
And I personally believe that that there was no weapons of mass destruction to be found. He just wanted to go over there for the oil.
You are right on, man.
And even if there was weapons of mass destruction, most people don't know that we sold Iraq weapons of mass destruction.
The chemicals in the 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah, we sold it before Desert Storm, and then the whole thing with Saddam Hussein.
All they had were, Peter, the balsa wood planes or something.
Yeah, I didn't have much. Yeah. I mean, they were floating, if you may remember, John, they were floating some absolutely crazy stories that that Saddam had these, as Jalene said, these balsa wood planes that they were going to load.
Drones.
And right. They were going to be able to float them over Boston and Chicago and Detroit. And
It's just like what's going on right now with the Becks and the Hannitys and Fox News in general trying to scare people.
Yeah, and you know, they were talking about how they're trying to compare Obama to Hitler. That topic, I think, would be different because Obama really hasn't done anything yet, and he still has to claim to everything Bush did, so how could he do anything?
Yeah, and if they say that his health program, I mean, it was like Hitler, there was a universal health care program in Germany since the 1880s. Yeah, you know, I mean, the United States, we finally got into it like two centuries later, have this non-government program. Hey, I got to go, John. But I pulled down my microphone.
You did.
Yeah, I don't want to do that.
I mean, I will take over if you want me to.
Thank you for your call. I appreciate it. And we have some open lines for you. We've got another hour, so join us.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Jalene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
It all starts with having a good, pre-screened group of contractors to choose from. And Hire It Done is your one-stop guide to finding the one that's right for your home improvement project. Hi, I'm Adam Helfman, host of WRIF's Hire It Done. Before you start your day's home improvement tasks around your house, grab a cup of hot coffee and tune us in Saturday mornings from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Join us this weekend. They're here, those pesky carpenter ants. We'll help you get their homes out of your home's walls. Are your gutters clear for optimal performance? And your attic, what's really going on up there? Also, spring is moving season. Hire It Done gives you the do's and don'ts for a successful home transition. Plus, we'll discuss the latest in short sales. If you know someone who is upside down in their mortgage, you need to tune into my show this Saturday where I have Will Elias, the short sale expert at 877-CALL-WILL, and he's going to discuss everything you need to know about short sales and the latest news on loan modifications. Plus, I'll take your house calls live. All this Saturday beginning at 7 a.m. on Hire It Done and 101 WRIF, The Riff.
Hire It Done.
Do people sometimes describe you as a saver, a bit frugal, penny-wise, and somewhat thrifty?
You know, cheap.
If that sounds like you, you're going to love the newest addition to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
Coupon crazy!
At MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com, you'll still find great gift certificates for local businesses with goods and services on sale for more than half off. Find money-saving online coupons that you can download right now and start saving immediately. Log on to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com and save big.
With online coupons from Autolab USA, with over 20 locations in the Metro Detroit area and a 12,000-mile, 12-month warranty. Hagopian Rug Care Center with 5 locations in Metro Detroit. They're the leader in carpet, rug, furniture, and tile cleaning.
If you're looking for ways to enjoy life and stay within your budget, then go
coupon crazy
now at MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com. That's MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com, your online home for great ways to save big at local Michigan businesses.
WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan.
All right, thank you very much. Welcome back to our second hour. And, hey, at 1 a.m. Eastern Time, if you feel screwed by taxes, listen at 1 a.m. when I interview Chuck Collins from the Institute for Policy Studies. He's going to talk about U.S. tax policy.
Yeah, but he does it. And yeah, no, he does it well. He does. He's engaging.
And the idea of this show isn't always to be entertaining. They always say Rush Limbaugh because I don't think he's an entertainer. I don't think I'm very entertaining. So, but I'm trying to get you some information. If you weren't
entertaining, Peter, you would not be still be here.
That's what I was looking for.
Come on.
That's what I was looking for. And Suzanne Gordon, who's a nurse and a professor of nursing, and she's written "When Chicken Soup Isn't Enough: Stories About Nurses Standing Up for Themselves, Their Patients, and Their Profession." So she's talking about nursing huts, the impact of healthcare, and what have you.
Peter, I'll read the email after you talk about this.
I was going to say, we're having a May Day celebration. I don't know. We, Jalene and I, it's a May Day. Let me put it this way. It's a May Day celebration benefit for the Fifth Estate magazine. You can go to fifthestate.org. Now, there's a link on my site as well to the Fifth Estate. You go to my Fifth Estate page. Why don't you do that? And then that will take you to the Fifth Estate site. It's Peter Werbe, WERBE.com. And the entertainment is Jalene Jordan and the Dusty Picks.
That's my band.
Yeah, the D. Kroll Band. And free beer. The band, not the beverage.
Great band.
It's Saturday, May 1st, 9 p.m. at the New Way Bar in Ferndale, and it is at about a little north of Nine Mile Road on the east side of the street. It's also celebrating the end of smoking in Michigan. And
In bars and restaurants.
Yeah.
Not just the end of Michigan.
Boy, I need you. I don't know. What am I like when you're not here? I think
you're more focused.
Yeah, maybe.
It's okay.
Maybe. But May Day, the traditional international workers' holiday, and we've got it away from the authoritarian state socialists, fortunately, and can put it back where it belongs, celebrating working people.
We'll be hitting the stage at 9:30.
Right.
FYI.
Okay.
So be there, be square, because I'm the opening act. I do about a half hour, and then it's party time.
Yeah, and it's, what do you mean? Why isn't it party time when you're on?
Well, because I don't party before I sing.
Oh, it's party time for you.
It's time for me to dance.
Oh, okay.
And, you know.
Yeah. Mission is only $5, and it includes a one-issue subscription to the magazine and a free copy of its 40th anniversary issue. The magazine, the publication, has been around for 45 years. Ooh. And also, May Day is the pagan holiday of spring and rejoicing at the end
solstice.
Of the solstice. Well,
no, solstice is June 21st.
Yeah,
this is a different pagan holiday.
Yeah. And so, this is...
We dig it. Brian from Windsor wrote in, "Hello, Peter and Jalene. These psycho fear pushers must not remember that their hero Ronald Reagan can be quoted saying something along the lines that we must never stop pursuing a world where all nuclear weapons are abolished." Reagan also stated something about the U.S. reducing its own nuclear weapons stockpile by a third, but those were just some of the many words Reagan spouted about a supposed nuclear-free world.
Yeah.
Great show as usual. Have a good night. Thank you very much, Brian.
Okay, women march topless in Portland.
Oh, yeah.
Without incident.
Without incident. And this is Portland, Oregon, which is... This is Maine?
It is. That's what I thought. I thought it was Oregon.
Exactly. I was going to say Maine is like real progressive.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, also, it's kind of cold there.
Okay, well, maybe not now. So
Wait a minute. Look at the photographs. They tastefully showed the women from behind. Look what the men are wearing.
What are the men wearing?
They're wearing like jackets.
Well, listen, these women had a mission, Peter.
Yeah.
And about 24 women marched topless from Longfellow Square to Tommy's Park this afternoon in an effort to erase what they see as a double standard on male and female nudity.
So I can take my top off in public. You can't.
I can't, but you know what?
What?
I don't want to. Okay? I really. Maybe in the middle of the woods. Not even in my backyard, for crying out loud. And what other part of this did you like, Peter? He likes the whole story.
The group attracted many amateur and professional photographers. What is with men? I mean, men are so embarrassing.
Oh, it is men. Yeah. Or it is Maine. Police said there were no incidents, no arrests. Nudity is illegal in Maine only if genitals are displayed.
So you can go topless but not bottomless.
Oh. Yeah. I'd probably go bottomless. I'm just kidding.
I was going to say.
Do any of the above.
The women preceded and followed by several hundred boisterous and mostly male onlookers, many of them carrying cameras, stayed on the sidewalk because they hadn't obtained a demonstration permit to walk in the street. About 1,000 people gathered as the march passed through Monument Square in downtown Portland, Maine, a mix of demonstrators, supporters, onlookers, and those just out enjoying a warm and sunny early spring day.
Well,
if it was early in the spring day, why are these guys all wearing jackets? Anyway.
I don't know. Long jacket. They're long jackets. Do you get it?
No.
Come on, Peter.
And I'm going to move on. But, you know, if I knew this was happening in Detroit, I would show up. Not with a camera, either. That's tacky.
What would you, with blinders?
No. It's all right to look. Don't touch.
The merchandise.
No touch. I know a feminist group once time said almost all the problems of the world would be solved if men didn't touch others without permission.
Ooh. You know, but
which would include war.
Well, that's a really good point. I'm a really huggy kind of gal, you know, so I would be in trouble.
Yeah.
But I don't, you know, like, just go grab someone's crotch all of a sudden. Hey, how you doing? You know?
What are you talking about? Time and Towel, who organized
bring
the march.
Bring it back down.
Said she was enraged by the turnout of men attracted to the demonstration.
Well, what
hey,
did she
Ty,
expect?
Get Come a on. Clue.
No.
The purpose, she said, was for society to have the same reaction to women walking around topless as it does to men without shirts on. Now, that's kind of interesting because, obviously, in societies, throughout Africa, Southern mm-hmm. Africa, mm-hmm. Amazonia,
South America.
I don't think too much in, but anyway, in where native people go, you know, without tops, you're right. It is, it isn't seen as any, it's just sort of a utilitarian part of the body.
Sure is.
You know, for nursing children. Uh-huh. But where those boobies are hidden, man, you know, it's like titillating, if you will.
The mystery
of it all. I mean, I don't know. When I was a kid, I used to love maiden form bra ads.
I can't believe you admitted it on the air. I've known this all this time, and I've kept your secret, Peter.
When there's some catalog we always get that my wife
says... Sears catalog.
It's better than that. But my wife says, hey, the what do you call it catalog is here.
I said, oh, Victoria's Secret?
No.
Because now that's a hot catalog. Yeah. The maiden form, they've come a long way, Peter.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is... Yeah. Let's get
we
back.
We digress.
Let's get back.
Once in a while.
Where is this here?
Let's get back to
these right-wingers that are trying to stir up the masses, getting mostly just this mobilization of the far-right wing of the Republican Party, which is the only thing there really is. So these people are just the crazed hordes thinking that the country is going down the drain. But this is happening all over the world. It says in Hungary, a far-right wing party backed by black-clad paramilitary extremists is poised to make dramatic gains Sunday. That's the Well, it just happened, didn't it? It's Monday already. In Hungary's national elections, mirroring recent advances by anti-immigration parties across Europe. Now, they're going to get 17% only, which is enough to put them into the government. And I was thinking they probably do better here, you know, than 17%.
Oh, right.
Yeah. But one of the things we were talking about is that these righties get all... upset because of what they see as Obama doing. Now, a federal judge ruled Wednesday that the National Security Agency's program of surveillance without warrants on wiretaps was illegal, rejecting the Obama administration's effort to keep shrouded in secrecy one of the most disputed counterterrorism policies of former President George W. Bush. Now, here, Obama is continuing the Bush illegal wiretapping. I mean, there is this...
Has he even talked about possibly getting rid of that?
No. They have the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, or FISA, which requires warrants. And if there's an emergency, I say, what if a terrorist is going to blow up something in an hour? You can do wiretapping, and then, though, you have to go in front of a judge. To absolutely have this means we have a rule of men and not of law. So these people have no regard for the Constitution whatsoever. Julie from Detroit, she writes, Dear Teabaggers, we had 8 years of Bush and Cheney, and now you're getting mad. You didn't get mad when the Supreme Court stopped a legal recount and appointed a president. You didn't get mad when Cheney allowed energy company officials, including Enron, to dictate energy policy. You didn't get mad when a covert CIA operative got outed. You didn't get mad when the Patriot Act got passed. You didn't get mad when we illegally invaded a country that posed no threat to us. You didn't get mad when we spent over $600 billion and counting on the Iraq war. You didn't get mad when over $10 billion dollars disappeared in Iraq. You didn't get mad when you found out the U.S. was torturing people in Iraq. You didn't get mad when the government was illegally wiretapping Americans. You didn't get mad when Bush didn't catch bin Laden. You didn't get mad when you saw the horrible conditions at Walter Reed Hospital for wounded veterans. You didn't get mad when Bush let a major U.S. city, New Orleans, drown. You didn't get mad when Bush gave a $900 billion tax break to the rich. You didn't get mad when the deficit hit the $1 trillion mark under Bush. You finally got mad when the government decided that people in America deserve the right to see a doctor if they are sick. Yes, illegal wars, lies, corruption, torture, stealing your tax dollars to make the rich richer are all okay with you teabaggers, but helping other Americans, oh, hell no.
I'm keeping this. This was excellent. Thank you, Julie.
Yeah, I don't know, Julie, if you're listening or not, you put that together yourself or is that taken from something? All right, this is a phone-in show. You'd hardly know it. Make it true, 313-298-WRIF.
It always happens when we have a week off. We have so much to say, but the lines are wide open, and you don't have to stick to any one of these topics. You can even bring up your own.
All right, Dale, let's make our show international. We know listeners are. You know, we haven't heard from, boy, see, out of sight, out of mind, our friend in Finland.
In Oulu, Finland?
Oh, I'm Jacob.
Jacob,
you still listening in Finland? We're morning drive there, by the way. So Abe said he wanted us in the daytime. In Oulu, Finland, we are morning drive. All right. Here's Henry in Windsor making our program international. Henry, hi. You're on the air.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hello.
I've got a problem with you guys today.
Oh no.
For calling the right-wingers idiots, you guys have to call them from what they really are.
Oh.
They're paid employees, paid in full, to uphold the interests of corporations and special interests.
Well, that's a lot nicer.
But that's the...
That's, people are not idiots. They're very clever and smart people, and they make a lot of money doing what they're doing.
That's the millionaires.
And you have to call...
But they do some idiotic things.
I'm making a distinction. I'm talking about the millionaires that they love so much, that, you know, the Gingriches and Limbaughs and all those people. They're not idiots. I mean, the people that believe them are idiots because they ought to be able to see what's right in front of their face.
True. The real, like you said, I was going to expand and say, though, the real idiots are the people that are the cause of this, that let this whole thing happen. And that's the people. The people are, let me tell you a story.
Okay.
I got some co-workers, and they're always complaining about how they don't have a job, and they're getting laid off, and well, they have a job, but the people are only getting laid off, they're getting pay cuts, and this and that, and I said, look, there's a great, and they asked me, because I like to think I'm pretty well-read, so they asked me these things, you know, why is all this happening? So, well, here's a documentary, it's called Capitalism Love Story, I'm sure you guys have heard of it. And
Michael Moore.
Yeah, they'll answer a lot of your questions, and so, of course, I come back a few weeks later, and I asked, how did you like the documentary? And none of them seen it. And I said, wow, that's amazing, and I keep bothering them, nobody wants to see it, so I went out and bought them the documentary.
Wow. Wait a minute. Are these Canadians or Americans?
I work in the U.S. as well as Canada.
Yeah. Okay.
So these are both.
Okay.
And I got a lot of coworkers, and after buying a whole bunch of these things, you can tell me, and you can probably guess how many people saw the documentary. I gave it to them for free. How many do you think saw the documentary?
None of them.
Bam.
So who are the real idiots?
Bam.
How could you complain and not even bother to educate yourself on why this is happening, or even open your mind to, even if they disagree with the documentary, at least watch it?
Yeah, no, because what I like the most is finding things that substantively challenge what I believe. I mean, sometimes I get these emails from these people that are writing me in all capital letters telling me...
You mean yelling? Screaming.
Yelling that I'm an idiot. And I go, wow, is there a word of substance here? Is there, like, anything that challenges my facts? Or every once in a while I get these people that say they want to... Debate me on the air. Okay, sure. I'll kick Jalene off and get them on the air for a Sunday.
Have at it.
All right, Henry, thank you. But keep fighting the good fight over there in Windsor. Thanks for making our show international. Appreciate it. Here is Rob in Mansfield, Ohio. Rob, hi. You're on the air. Thanks for joining Jalene and me.
Well, I want to say congratulations. I have listened to a lot of stations, and you're the first I've heard that actually have good things to say about our president and not degrading him, so kudos to the both of you.
Okay.
Well, I think we're a little more critical of Barack Obama than you may think, but it's from the left, not from the right.
Well, that would be okay. I mean, he's not a perfect man, and we all know this, but you got to admit that he's doing a little more for the people than what the last administration did.
Well, that's easier. You know, that's like saying we want him to do a little better, and that's like saying he's better than a stick in the eye, which Bush was.
I think he's more than a stick in the eye, but yeah.
Well, less than a stick in the eye.
Question for you.
Sure.
This goes along with your RNC comments that are really, you know, it really upsets me.
What?
These people, they get on the TV and they're going to badmouth the health care and talk about how it's 2,700 pages long and how we can't understand it. What do these people expect if you're going to revamp the health care industry for the whole United States? Do they want it in a 5-page booklet and explain everything? Stupid do they think we are?
Well,
I thought you wanted to talk about that lesbian bondage act again.
You know, I think she wants to talk about that.
I just think it's so funny.
That's okay, but that doesn't bother me as much as these idiots that get on the TV set and talk crap about the health care and how many pages it is. I mean, do they really expect they're going to revamp something and it be in a short version?
No, they know that. I mean, it's just all political theater. And I wonder how many people are following that, or whether all of this is in a fairly small universe. Well, Rob, if you're not going to talk about the Republicans and lesbian bondage, I'm going to cut you loose. So thanks, Rob. Thanks for finding us. I appreciate it.
That was my favorite story of the week.
Yeah.
Come on.
But, you know, can you imagine all these people probably just tuned in, and this was
what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Well, the Republican National Committee paid for some of their youngins, their up and comers, for a little night of entertainment. Dropped $2,000 at this club where they simulate lesbian bondage on stage. And
so we were just wondering if you contribute to the Republican National Committee.
But you know what?
For some of your money.
What's even more amazing to me is these people are so against gay marriage, but they want to watch them, you know, go at it.
Well, now, and no one has said this in a long time, but when past years, when I would say something about like gay marriage or gays and what have you, they'd say, when I think of what those guys do, it just makes me sick. Well, the two things I say is, one, I said, try not thinking about it. That would be my first advice for you. And the second thing is, how about if we just let women marry? Because
that doesn't turn you off at all,
does it?
Oh, guys, come on.
All right. Here's Ryan in Southgate. Ryan, hi. It's Peter and Jolene. Thanks for joining us in WRIF.
How are you doing today? I've never listened to your show before because I'm ever up this late, but you guys seem interesting.
Okay, well, thank you.
Interesting. Okay, that works.
I will start off by saying I don't align myself with any specific Republican or Democratic Party.
Good idea.
Yeah, we don't either.
I consider myself just a conservative.
Oh.
And, you know, with the healthcare issue, it's not the fact that people are mad about healthcare reform. Everybody wants healthcare reform. It's the fact that this is the first time in American history that the federal government has forced its citizens to buy something, whether they can or cannot afford it.
Well, there is supposed to be subsubsidies. I mean, I'm sort of worried.
If you can't afford it, you're going to get help.
Ryan, I am a little worried about all this and how it's going to go down. I mean, every other country in the Western world, industrial countries, as you know, has one form or another of universal single-payer health care paid for by the government or some combination of private and public health insurance. So that's not that unusual, but you're right. I mean, there is, I don't know. I mean,
they got their citizens. They come down here. You know, they come here for the health care. So their health care system sucks. And
who's they? Who are they?
The Canadians.
Oh, no.
Peter, I can't do this tonight.
Go ahead. We've done this a lot of times. That's not true. Most Canadians are very satisfied with their health care system. It certainly provides health care for everybody. It doesn't just provide health care for the people that can afford it or are poor or are elderly. So, about 50% of American health care is government health care, Medicare, Medicaid. About a third of it is private, and then the rest of the people don't have it. But there are, you know, if you could probably talk to Canadians and say, what do you think about your health care system? And most of them I talk to would probably say, oh, it's pretty good, you know. And some of them would say, oh, you know, it sucks, or I've had this real bad experience. What do you think if you opened up the lines, and we have, to people in the United States and said, give me your experiences within the American healthcare system? Well, it depends. If you're... you know, if you're positioned right, like I am, I'd have great things to say about it and talk about the wonderful care I get, the individual attention, the amount of time health practitioners take with me. If you have a lousy health insurance policy, or
none at all,
or like none at all, or if you're in Medicaid or something like that, well, then it begins to fall off considerably. The United States, let me just say this, I'll leave you with this. The United States has the best health care in the world. It has one of the worst healthcare systems in the Western world, mainly because it's a mainly for profit. It denies healthcare to tens of millions of people.
But if you can afford it, we can heal you like an MF.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, man. How are there conservatives in Southgate? I do not understand this. Let's see, here's Mike in Clyde Township. Mike, where in the world is Clyde Township?
Just outside of Port Huron.
Everything is right outside of Port Huron, but go ahead.
Beautiful over there.
Hey, you got hit by that bad windstorm just this week, didn't you? I heard there's some damage up there.
Yeah, there was a little bit of wind.
Yeah. Okay, what, you want to talk about medical marijuana?
Yeah, it's just like the Republicans are trying to take over the growing, I heard.
What do you mean they're trying to take over the growing? Are you with me? Mike? Let me see.
No, that was weird.
Everything is up. He's up.
We'll put you on hold. How about that?
I don't know. No,
gone.
He dropped off. I think maybe he had an issue. There was an issue with the Royal Oak police confiscated 6.5 ounces of a medical marijuana patient's stash.
Oh, that's right, that's right. And
the ACLU was saying, hey, and this is, talk about the times they are changing.
The ACLU said they're not going to touch it, right?
No, they said they demanded it back. They said to the Royal Oak Police, we want you to assure, one, we want you either to
give him back his weed, man.
Give him back his stash.
Yeah.
I love this. give him back his stash or pay him. And they also wanted to get a promise from the Royal Oak Police that they would not interfere with the Michigan law, which permits patients under this new statute to have that. And, you know, now you look in the Metro Times and there are clinics set up having trouble getting approved as medical marijuana patient.
You know, it's just like the health care reform, Peter. There's going to be continued fallout, continued changes, things like this. I mean, it's just the natural progression.
Oh, man, like I got total headaches all the time. Oh, sure. Here's your script. Man, it's all gone.
I feel so much better.
I feel good. I experimented with marijuana in college.
You did?
Yeah. It was a success.
Me too. It was like the most successful part of college that I had, other than I finally got my degree.
I never got that. I was too high. No, I'm only kidding. That's not true.
It's not true.
By the way, I'm too ADD. I probably would have done well. That makes you concentrate.
You were busy smashing the state. Come on, were you?
And playing and shooting pool.
Oh, well, that's important.
Yeah, yeah. Shot a lot of pool, and I still got my cue.
You do?
In a little leather case, screws apart, you know? Yeah.
Well, bring it to the New Way on May 1st for
they
our
party. Pool tables? They do
have
pool tables.
They
but usually
do.
They put food on top of it.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes they do.
Yeah. New Way is going to be a benefit for the Fifth Estate magazine. Angelina and her band, some other bands are going to be playing. Go to my website, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com. You'll find all the information. Am I hosting it?
Actually, I thought it was the guy from the Grandy Ballroom.
Oh, yeah. I said somewhere or other that I was going to host it.
You did, but I thought, what, did you fire this big
I
name from the
about
Grandy
that.
Ballroom?
Oh, it was Dave Miller.
Dave Miller's going to be there hosting it. I think you could come up, but, you know, we'll let you get on the mic.
Yeah. Okay, so all of you people who get my email blast, I said I was going to host it. I forgot. Dave Miller from the Grandy Ballroom, for those of you not familiar with ancient rock history or another part of town, the Grandy Ballroom was where all the
you
major,
name it.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody under the sun. Led Zeppelin, Hendrix, The Who.
Yeah.
Yeah. We can go through all the classic.
I wasn't
rock.
Here. Yeah. You weren't either.
You weren't
right,
even
Peter.
Born.
I love when you say that.
Yeah. Yeah. I was four. Me, mommy, and daddy used to take me.
Of course.
Yeah. All right. 313-298-WRIF is our phone number. And let's see. Here is Nick. Nick is in Rochester Hills. Nick, hi. You're on the air.
Hi. First, I just want to say Julie from Detroit said much of what I wanted to say, and it's great to see people pointing out these contradictions within the right-wing movement. But a few more things that need to be addressed is that these self-identified Tea Partiers are a perfect example of why the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. These folks are controlled by fear. Fear of propaganda fed to them by guys like Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, and Glenn Beck.
Sure.
I mean, I don't know if these people realize the Cold War ended over 20 years ago, but when they talk about communists and socialists taking over our government, I can guarantee you that not a single one of them actually knows what these things are. And in actuality, what's fueling this movement is racism, pure and simple.
I think so.
Can't handle the fact that a black man is in office. Another thing is that these tea baggers don't realize is that no matter the issue, they never stop to think that they're always on the side of war, always on the side of intolerance, always on the side of, to use a word that you guys brought tonight, the plutocracy, and always against democracy.
Absolutely.
And the thing that worries me most is that this right-wing movement has many of the same parallels that drove Hitler and the Nazis to power in Germany. Hitler got elected at a time when unemployment was very high, just like it is now. The country was politically divided. The Nazis had the Jews as a scapegoat. The Tea Partiers have immigrants and terrorists as a scapegoat, and they both railed against anything that smelled of socialism or communism. So, you know, we can call these people stupid, ignorant, and racist, all of which is true, by the way, but these people will be a force to be reckoned with when it comes election time. So there should be a wake-up call for progressives to organize and show up at the polls, because there's a great chance that we could end up with a presidency and a Congress that'll make the Bush administration look like a bunch of tree huggers.
Well, you could be right. Well, here, let me just... You're on a roll.
I love almost everything you said.
Yeah.
But these teabaggers, I know they are scary, but they're getting so much press time. They're not that large of a percentage, really,
no.
Right?
No. They're like, and most of them are Republicans. They're like 74%.
And they're putting the fear into you of them.
And Nick, I don't know. Are you familiar with this event that's going to occur in Detroit in June the 22nd to 26th, the U.S. Social Forum?
No, I'm not.
Okay. Well, given what you said, go to my website, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com. Drop down a little bit on the main page, and you'll see this event. This is going to probably bring 15,000 progressives into Detroit to try to figure out how are we going to move forward. It's like I said earlier, mostly the teabaggers just want to get conservative Republicans into the election. Liberals, progressives, leftists now have a semblance of what they see as the left in power, which it really isn't. So they got to figure out some ways we're going to address the problems of this country when we essentially have a centrist or a center-right government in. I mean, how are we going to push an agenda that's a left agenda? And a left agenda, to me, is what I think you were getting at. It's something that supports the majority of people, the middle-class people, the working-class people, the poor. It doesn't do much for the rich, but the rich always manage to take care of themselves. In fact, even in countries where they have what they call social democracy or socialism, where there's extraordinarily high taxes on the wealthy, Denmark and places like that, they still, the rich still rule. It's the golden rule. He who has the gold rules. All right. Thank you so much. Appreciate your enthusiasm. And check out the U.S. Social Forum or just Google it. Tell me what you think next time. All right. Let's see. Here is Ryan. Ryan's in Novi. Hi, Ryan. You're on the air.
Hi there. I heard the last caller talking about the Tea Party, and I also heard the email that you read about 20 minutes ago or so. The fact of the matter is this. I consider myself a conservative, and I followed this Tea Party movement in the beginning. And here's my take on it.
Okay.
Fox News is to the media on the right what MSNBC is to the media on the left.
No way.
No way.
Well, to some extent, but not quite. I mean, let me just. I'll let you go.
Not to that extreme.
Yeah, I would say that Fox News is way, way, way extremely to the right, as opposed to MSNBC, Keith Olbermann and Rachel Maddow.
Rachel Maddow,
that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, they're like left liberals.
Sure, that's fine. But the point that I was getting at is the Tea Party movement started out as. Sure, we were all very disappointed when the Patriot Act passed. We were very disappointed when 90% of all the things that you listed in that email that the lady from Detroit, I believe, wrote.
Julie,
we were all
right?
Very disappointed. Yes, angry. Because we're constitutionalists at heart. And the Tea Party movement was hijacked by the Fox News media arm, by Glenn Beck, and it's now a divide and conquer that they're using to turn people against each other. I'm not against anybody. I'm not against anybody with a liberal point of view. As long as everything is done within the confines of the Constitution, I don't see a problem. But
yeah. But
Glenn Beck has come out here and he's fear-mongered and he's turned everybody into just these raging lunatics and that's what the media is portraying now. But at the heart of it, we are constitutionalists and I'm a Ron Paul supporter. I voted for Ron Paul in the straw polls in the primaries, and I wrote him in. You know, and he's a constitutionalist, and I wish he would run as a third party candidate.
Well, I think Ron Paul is a different set of. Well, of course, his son is being supported by the Tea Party in Kentucky. Pardon me. Okay, thank you. Appreciate your call very much. We will be right back.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan. On 101 WRIF, let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Jalene will be taking more of your calls right after this.
Do people sometimes describe you as a saver? A bit frugal, penny-wise, and somewhat thrifty?
You know, cheap.
If that sounds like you, you're going to love the newest addition to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
Coupon crazy!
At MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com, you'll still find great gift certificates for local businesses with goods and services on sale for more than half off. Find money-saving online coupons that you can download right now and start saving immediately. Log on to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com and save big.
With online coupons from Autolab USA, with over 20 locations in the Metro Detroit area and a 12,000-mile, 12-month warranty. Hagopian Rug Care Center with 5 locations in Metro Detroit. They're the leader in carpet, rug, furniture, and tile cleaning.
If you're looking for ways to enjoy life and stay within your budget, then go
coupon crazy
now at MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com. That's MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com. Your online home for great ways to save big at local Michigan businesses.
It all starts with having a good, pre-screened group of contractors to choose from. And Hire It Done is your one-stop guide to finding the one that's right for your home improvement project. Hi, I'm Adam Helfman, host of WRIF's Hire It Done. Before you start your day's home improvement tasks around your house, grab a cup of hot coffee and tune us in Saturday mornings from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Join us this weekend. They're here, those pesky carpenter ants. We'll help you get their homes out of your home's walls. Are your gutters clear for optimal performance? And your attic, what's really going on up there? Also, spring is moving season. Hire It Done gives you the do's and don'ts for a successful home transition. Plus, we'll discuss the latest in short sales. If you know someone who is upside down in their mortgage, you need to tune into my show this Saturday where I have Will Elias, the short sale expert at 877-CALL-WILL, and he's going to discuss everything you need to know about short sales and the latest news on loan modifications. Plus, I'll take your house calls live. All this Saturday beginning at 7 a.m. on Hire It Done and 101 WRIF, The Riff.
Hire It Done.
Do you owe back taxes to the IRS that you can't afford to pay? Or are you stuck in a tax payment plan that's getting you nowhere? The IRS is now taking very aggressive actions, such as bank levies and wage garnishments. If you owe the IRS at least $15,000, call American Tax Relief. They've helped thousands of people like you eliminate up to 85% of their delinquent taxes. Call 1-800-493-8159. If you qualify, American Tax Relief can settle your tax debts for less than you owe. Remove penalties and interest and protect you from bank levies and garnishments. As a hardworking American, you do have rights. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation and see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-493-8159. If you qualify, you can save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Call right now. 1-800-493-8159. That's 1-800-493-8159.
We're back with more Night Call. 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
All right, thank you, and welcome back to our final half hour. You can join us. Well, they just gave you the numbers. At 1 a.m., if you feel screwed by taxes, well, you should. And Chuck Collins, pardon me, we'll talk about U.S. tax policy and who benefits the most from its unequal application. I'm reading from my website.
It didn't sound like it at all.
Yeah. Also, Suzanne Gordon talking about nurses and what's happening to them, whether you should go into it as a profession, men and women, of course.
Because, you know, my dad said it one time. He goes, you know, so maybe you can, I have a college degree already. I've been in radio for like 16 or 17 years. He goes, you know, you could always use something else to fall back on.
There you go.
He says, what about nursing school? Is it a good idea, Peter?
Oh, I don't know. Well, yeah. Yeah, they're going to need a lot of nurses.
Okay.
And it's a hell of a job. I mean, beyond just the normal stuff. You know, I had all of these facts about... do you have that about taxes? No, you know what? You don't have that. I have that. And I don't know why the hell
you're always keeping things from yourself.
I want to sound smarter. All I'm ever doing is reading. I have no idea what's actually going on. Well, you know, actually, that is a good way to find out things. Read. Just
yeah,
not
reading
read.
Is yeah, it's, yeah. An, it's amazing.
Yeah. And, you know, I actually... I mean that, as opposed to sitting and watching television, because it's a little harder to have critical thinking when you're watching television. All right, let's, this could be interesting. Here is Carl. Carl, hi, you're on the air. Where are you calling from?
Well, I'm on the way back to Jackson, Michigan.
All right, go ahead. What's happening? You saw the teabagger truck?
Yeah, it's not a truck, dude. It's got to be the biggest Class A motorhome I've seen in my life.
Oh, wow.
Where did you see it?
It was on Lexus in Toledo.
Yeah, what was it, like, completely psychotic?
Packed full of people. They were getting gas.
They're full of gas.
Yeah.
Hot air.
it was hand-painted, and I bet you the paint job cost just as much as the RV did.
Well, I'll tell you what. I think, Carl, that they're probably peaking too early. You know, they got their energy is just out in front. And
don't give them advice,
yeah,
Peter.
Yeah, go home. They were just in Clinton Township. Carl, thanks for the sighting.
Yeah.
Here is
T-Banger sighting.
Let's see. The Tea Party Express rolled into Clinton Township, and they had shirts that read "Impeach Obama," because he's—I don't say why. There's a sign that says Obama.
Does it say because he's black?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, that's right. They won't admit it.
They have, you know, there was a slogan. In fact, I had it on my car. I think a friend of mine made a bunch of them here. Bush lies, people die.
Yeah, I had that on my car for a while.
So now they got Obama lies, grandma dies.
Oh, please, those panels.
Definitely.
I have to tell you, my parents never listened to this show. I don't think my dad has... His poor old ticker can't take it.
Hey, Wes.
You know?
How you doing,
hey,
buddy?
But he never listens, so I can always talk about my family through the years I have. My mother sent me this thing, and it was said, I lost a lot of people that I really love this year. I loved Michael Jackson, and he died. I loved Farrah Fawcett, and she died, and I loved blah, blah, blah. And then at the end it says, and I really love President Obama.
Really? Your mom?
Yeah, she thought that was so funny, and she's like apolitical. She thinks it's just funny. And I wrote back, Mom, not funny at all.
Wait a minute.
Offensive.
Then I missed it.
Because
I thought you meant she loved them.
They're saying everyone who they love died.
Oh.
At the end, they love Obama, so they want him to pass away somehow. or go away.
She
didn't mean it. My mom didn't mean it, but all these friends.
I always tell guests, don't pound on the council.
I'm like, I'm so angry. So I just said, boo, Julene.
Wow. But let's see. Here's who was in Clinton Township. Anti-abortion activists, militia members, libertarians, and fiscally conservative Republicans. So it is, you know, rather than being some widespread cross-spectrum manifestation, it's really just this mobilization of the far right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So we will discount them. We'll see how they wind up. All right, let's take some more calls at 313-298-WRI. Theo has been waiting patiently from Detroit. Thank you, Theo.
You're welcome. Happy Sunday to both of you.
Well, thank you.
First, can you tell me if the email that Julie had is on your website or available?
Well, you're about...
you're going to have to put it up there.
Yeah, Peter. I'm gonna have to put it up there.
Okay.
Yeah.
I will remind him.
Oh, thank you. The other thing, you had talked about national health care, but I don't hear much conversation about the important national health care for veterans. That's been out there for years, right?
They have socialized medicine.
Hey, nobody even talks about that. I wonder why.
Yeah. I've actually got two friends that have just had serious medical problems, both being treated great at VA hospitals.
That's right.
In fact, one of them got 46 years old and had to have bypass surgery. And I forgot that he was a Marine vet. Mm. And I said, man, what are you doing for health care? And he said, oh, I've got universal single-payer health care. Veterans Administration.
Yeah. So we have to make sure that people realize that. What is sad to me is the fact that Rush Limbaugh, who has enough money to buy all the Oxycontin he needs and to build a hospital in every state if he wants, is leading people who don't have a pot or a window over a cliff.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's what's so strange is sometimes you read about these teabaggers and they'll say so-and-so's unemployed or, of course, mm-hmm. a lot of them are on Social Security right. and getting Medicare
yeah.
or Medicaid if they're...
Already?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And, I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah. Mm. All right, Theo, thank you very much. I appreciate your call. Thanks for joining us. Let's see. Here is Dave in Port Huron. Hi, Dave. You're on the air.
How are you?
We're good.
Hey, Julene, how are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Hey, I just wanted to give you guys a quick call. And I love the fact that the callers that call in are liberals and conservatives and neithers.
Yeah.
And everybody's listening. And one of the things that I wanted to share is just a really quick story. I was in Central America last week. I was in Costa Rica.
Okay.
And with Costa Rica, they've been a very proud democracy since 1948.
They have no army.
They have no army. They disbanded that in 1948. They have totally covered health care.
Yep.
They have all of their education covered.
Don't try to get an abortion there, though.
Well,
I mean, I know you're not going to, but...
No, I'm not going to, exactly. So the thing I wanted to share is that I was in a car with a guide that I was taking out into the rainforest, or he was taking me, and I happened to mention that he, you know, if he has his healthcare covered, he lives in a socialist nation.
Uh-huh.
And it was a joke, but it didn't go over well.
Uh-oh.
And he said, we have been a democratic nation for 62 years.
Well, I think certainly in Latin America, when one thinks of a socialist state, they think of Cuba. And so they, you know, differentiate between socialism and democracy. I mean, if socialism actually lived up to its promise, which it so far has not anywhere that it's established itself, it would be democratic, that it wouldn't have 50-year rulers, or it wouldn't have the kind of, you know, authoritarian structure that it's had and it has. That's the problem.
Completely agree. And what really got me is I was kind of giving him a hard time about it, because I hear all this, well, if you have socialist medicine or if they pay for your medicine, you're a socialist nation. And he was very, very, very defensive. And this is a nation that, as the teabaggers would like to say, okay, they have socialist medicine. For individuals born this year, they have 2 years more life expectancy than we do in the United States.
In Costa Rica, Yeah.
They have more teachers than police officers. 25% of that nation is set aside into preserves and national parks. They're doing it right.
Yeah, we have 25% of the country devoted to garbage dumps.
Exactly. So hopefully people that just throw off and sling out, that's socialist, will realize that, no, people that are doing the health care the way I would love to see the health care done here, no, it's not socialist.
Well, let me tell you one other thing about socialist, and, I'm so bad at names, but the guy that called in from Rochester Hills, socialism, I was going to ask him, but I thought maybe he wouldn't understand why I was asking. I was going to ask him how old he was, because he sounded like he was in his 20s. You start talking about socialism to people in their 20s, it's like, so what? the teabagger crowd is a lot of older folks, so socialism, you know, was the great bugbear back, when they were in their 20s and 30s. But it just doesn't have the same, you know, feel to it anymore. That doesn't invoke the fear in the majority of young people. And also that when you have countries like Denmark and that have high degree of social services paid for by the government through taxes, I mean, you can say it's socialism, but it's really not socialism. Socialism really is like what happened in the Soviet Union or in Cuba or in North Korea or what, and not even like China anymore, because what they have in Denmark and Sweden and Norway, places like that, is more properly called what they call in Europe social democracy. So the main forms of ownership are private. So you have the banks are private and the industries are private, but you have, like I say, a lot of government paid programs that make life a lot easier for people and not such a struggle like they are here in the United States. And also they have within the tax structure, so that you don't have the amount of poor people we have, you don't have the amount of obscene wealth that that's here. So you have 25 guys making $25 billion off of funds where a block away from their office they got people going through the trash cans for pop bottles. All right, Dave, I'm going to start rushing through some calls because we've got not too much time left, but thank you. Appreciate your thoughts. Here is Jason in Ypsilanti. Jason, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I really hadn't heard you guys talk too much about the Michigan militia. I was just wondering if you thought they were with the Metallica's metal militia.
What?
No.
We love
Metallica, man.
Yeah, we're down with Metallica.
Yeah.
The news doesn't really say much about them. I was just wondering if you thought they were actually dangerous or if they were just exercising their Second Amendment.
They spend a lot of time on it. I think that as news goes, it ebbs and flows and it goes away real quick. It's a big deal and then poof, it's on to the next story.
Yeah.
What they were saying was that allegedly they wanted to kill a police officer, and then
this was the Yehutu or whatever.
Yeah,
Yehutu. Huba Huba.
Sounds like
Hubba Hubba.
An episode like a Survivor. Anyway,
yeah. Well, I mean, the Michigan militia, fortunately, knew that that these people were trouble, and when they asked to be hidden out by them, they said, "No, get out of here." I think militias are inherently dangerous, and if you look again at the European fascist experience, it in many ways was brought about by private militias grouped around right-wing political parties. And these militias all across the United States are all right-wing. In fact, if you tried to have, and I said, I don't know if you heard me earlier, Jason, but I said, if there tried to be a left-wing militia in this state of Michigan, and you'd say, okay, here's the Michigan militia, they're out there training, they got their camos and all their guns, and they're, you know, shooting things up and, saying they're supporting the Constitution, yeah, yeah. If there was a left-wing group that that did the same thing, they would probably last about 45 minutes before they would be down, face down in the mud with plastic handcuffs behind their back.
African-American
if
militia.
If there was an African-American militia, they'd last about 14 minutes and probably half of them would be killed in the raid on their compound.
For sure.
White right-wingers can get away with it. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Let's see. Here is Chris in Sterling Heights. Hi, Chris. You're on the air.
Hey, what's up, Mike?
Hi.
Hey, I understand you're short on time, so I'll make this very quick. I want to get two websites out, Infowars.com and WhatReallyHappened.com. And then one question for you.
Sure.
What is the difference between George Bush and Barack Obama?
That's, you know, that's too long. I mean, there is actually a lot of difference.
I think this is a joke.
No, there's not.
Okay.
But what he's trying to say is what some critics, even on the left, have said, that in terms of some of the policies, so like the TARP funds, the wars, the continuation of surveillance and what have you, things like that, there's a maintenance of the same policies, right, Chris?
That's correct.
Yeah.
He has not changed policies whatsoever.
Support for the Patriot Act, the renewal of it, and what have you. Well, you know, a lot of it has to do with some of these executive orders, the way that, that Bush just turned everything over to the corporations. And is how far has Obama moved from that? It's nowhere near where I would have liked to. But I'll tell you what, I look at InfoWars. What was the other one? I forgot.
What really happened?
Why don't you take a look at counterpunch.org? Do you know that?
No, sir, I do not.
Okay. I look at InfoWars. Some of it's useful. A lot of it, I think, is way off the mark. I think that probably, well, all right, I'll look at those, but it's nothing new for me because I do, not every day. But I'll look at them tomorrow morning. If you would, you look at counterpunch.org and also commondreams.org. All right? Fair enough, eh?
Fair enough.
Okay. Commondreams.org, counterpunch.org. Appreciate it. Let's see, 313-298-WRIF. I'm just saying that in case we need some more callers. I don't know whether we will or we won't. Regina in East Point. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Great.
I'm watching, I didn't know you were national. Because when I was in Florida, I'm going, oh, my God, I can't watch them. You're national.
We're bad. We're nationwide.
I know. And you know what? West Virginia?
Yeah?
I'm the crying caller. You know, they got a $168,000 fine for what they did.
For the miners?
They for 1 hour, that's what they got fined. 500 infractions. And I didn't know you were national. And I wanted to call today because, you know what? The people in West Virginia need to know, you know, that we're all there for them. And, you know, this mining thing is just ridiculous.
Well, it is. Regina, let me say this. You have a big heart and you have a good heart. And the way you express yourself is wonderful. The compassion that we should all have for what happened there. And understand, though, that it's not just an accident, as we were saying. That part of it is, as you were indicating, that, you know, having so many violations and allowing that to continue. By the way, this show broadcasts only in the Detroit area. But via the internet, we go all around the world. Jalene and I previously have had nationally syndicated shows. I'm never doing it again. Jalene keeps wanting to do it. But
I say never say never.
Yes, right. Keep your good heart, Regina. Thank you. And have a good night. Let's see. Here is Darius in Centerline. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, pretty good. I'm a baby boomer, so I don't go for that 20-year-old stuff.
Okay.
Listen, I'm concerned about, the Harvard study about people that don't have any health coverage. 43,000 people die every year,
right,
because they don't have health insurance. That's just that. And I'm telling you, I personally am on the way out because I don't have health care. I had a catastrophic illness before it was passed. I'm in big trouble.
What about if I'm...
No.
I said I didn't
want to... I will answer.
Well, you said you're a baby boomer, so I can ask you your age. Aren't you in your 60s?
On March 22nd, I turned... I have stroke damage, so I've got to figure this out. I'm born in 1952. So I'm 58.
All right. So you're not eligible yet for Medicare, but
no,
aren't you eligible for...
I couldn't afford it. I wouldn't be able to use that.
Yeah. How about Medicaid?
I'm disqualified. I was rejected from that.
Man.
Because I have a little bit too much in the bank, and, you know, and then that becomes what everybody's looking for the bills.
Yeah.
But see, look, when I was admitted to the hospital, I was unconscious because the hospital before that had put me out because I was so upset about how am I going to pay for it. They knocked me out with drugs. So I went into the hospital. I was admitted. I never signed the papers, so I'm not liable for any of those bills, and I never will pay them because this is bad. Very, very unfair.
It is indeed, and it's the whole nature of our system. And one of the things we said is that there may be somebody who has like $1,000 or $2,000 less in the bank than you, and they're eligible. So it creates all this resentment among people that are, you know, barely eligible, you know, almost eligible, and then eligible. And that's why we've got to have one system across the board, which would be Medicare for everyone. Of course, we couldn't keep paying $1 trillion a year for a war budget and having two wars and not tax the rich properly. All right. Best of luck, man. God, it's terrible.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, indeed. Here's Urban in River Rouge. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah. The thing about I've known about the Tea Party and Houtari, whoever that is.
Yeah, Houtari, that's it.
Is that they're mentally and spiritually sick.
That sounds about right. We'll go with that.
Well said.
Yes, and yeah, I mean, you take a look at the, you try to look at the Bible and stuff. They won't tell you which one it is because they have their own versions.
Oh, they've got their own Bible, huh?
Well, Urban, that's what happens. I mean, think about the Mormons. They just kind of made up their own thing. Or the Christian Scientists. Or
Scientology.
Scientology.
Yeah.
Well, no, I mean off of Christianity.
Oh, okay, from the L. Ron Hubbard folks.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think they think he's the Messiah. All right, I got to get one more call, Urban, so
we
sorry to cut
find
you
that,
short.
We both find that very disturbing.
Yeah.
Okay. We're with you.
Well, that's what happens. Things begin as a cult, become a sect.
I'll tell you what.
And then become a religion.
I am not going to read and or believe and or go by something that a bunch of old white men a million years ago maybe did and said. Sorry.
There you go. Here's Russ in Westland. Russ, hi, you're on the air. Hey, Russ.
You're the guy that works here?
What?
It's for me.
Yeah.
I swear to God, it's for me.
Yeah.
Another little young guy? Dude,
yeah.
About like this tall?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
What was that?
But Russ? Hey, Russ.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hi, man. You're on the air.
Oh, I'm sorry, dude. I was at the gas station.
I'm like, is he talking about Nick? What?
Last time I was on hold forever.
Oh, it's okay.
It happens.
But tell me quick, because we're almost out of time.
Oh, well, what's going on? Are you guys talking about politics right now?
We do every Sunday night. Between 11 and 1, and 2, actually.
And the clock is ticking.
Yeah, we're talking about...
Oh, sorry, yeah, so...
How do you feel about the teabaggers?
Teabaggers?
Yeah.
Okay, teabaggers on which case?
Well, in the case they're calling themselves, the political teabaggers. I don't know what they're doing in their bedrooms, but usually the Republicans over
not
there
sex and
in
not
Congress
the
are really kinky,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be great.
I mean,
that'd be great.
Yeah. They could all be like us, a regular working citizens, you know? what I have to comment... I'm sorry, guys.
Let me ask you a question. You're driving...
No, I am not.
Oh, that's good.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, he's getting ready to drive.
I don't mean
to drive. He's getting ready to drive.
I'm worried that you might need a designated driver, Russ.
No, Russ has only had two.
Okay.
Okay, two. Right. Two,
I swear to God, I've
two and 2 minutes or 2 and 2 hours?
All right. We're going to have to cut this one short because we got to go. All right, Russ, thanks for being our last caller. Jalene Jordan, thank you so much.
And you know what? No more than 1 hour per drink if you're going to drink and drive.
Yes.
I just want to say that. And thank you to Jade for answering the phones.
Absolutely,
and we
Jade.
Will be back next week.
Stay tuned for the interviews.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this.
Win big at the casino?
Nope, better than that. I just got a great deal at MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
Ah, yes, MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com, the online connection to half off or more deals from tons of Metro Detroit businesses.
I always look there first. They're the best bet for online coupons and discounts.
This week, MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com is featuring Clancy's Irish Pub in Clinton Township.
Jackpot! Nobody beats MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
Deal yourself a winning hand. Save time and money by shopping from the comfort of your own home when you connect to amazing deals like these and more at MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
It all starts with having a good, pre-screened group of contractors to choose from. And Hire It Done is your one-stop guide to finding the one that's right for your home improvement project. Hi, I'm Adam Helfman, host of WRIF's Hire It Done. Before you start your day's home improvement tasks around your house, grab a cup of hot coffee and tune us in Saturday mornings from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Join us this weekend. They're here, those pesky carpenter ants. We'll help you get their homes out of your home's walls. Are your gutters clear for optimal performance? And your attic, what's really going on up there? Also, spring is moving season. Hire It Done gives you the do's and don'ts for a successful home transition. Plus, we'll discuss the latest in short sales. If you know someone who is upside down in their mortgage, you need to tune into my show this Saturday where I have Will Elias, the short sale expert at 877-CALL-WILL, and he's going to discuss everything you need to know about short sales and the latest news on loan modifications. Plus, I'll take your house calls live. All this Saturday beginning at 7 a.m. on Hire It Done and 101 WRIF, The Riff. Hire It Done.
Do you want a wireless laptop, but your credit score is holding you back? We can help. Guaranteed. If you have a bank account and can afford weekly payments of just $29.99 for 12 months, we'll send you a brand new wireless laptop, no matter what your credit looks like. Call Tronics Country now. You're approved for a brand new Dell or HP laptop. Call now and we'll also include a free MP3 player and free LCD TV with your paid order. Call 800-990-2258. Still not sure? Then hear what our customers say.
I'm really enjoying my laptop.
I just wanted to call to say how happy I am with it.
And I'm very pleased with their service, so I would suggest to anyone that is looking for computers or trying to find computers, Tronics is the best place to call.
Call now and lock in your free gifts. You will not be turned down. Call 800-990-2258. 800-990-2258. That's 800-990-2258.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you, and it's coming up to tax time, isn't it? April 15th. I'm recording this on April 8th, and two things I was thinking about in terms of taxes. One, I remember when I was about 10 years old, I was in a drugstore, and I heard some older man, he might have been in his 40s or something, say, the only thing certain about life is death and taxes. And I thought, wow, this is one profound man. You know, I mean, little did I know it was a tremendous cliche. Going back probably 100 years or so, maybe more. The other thing is, and I want to talk with this about this with our guest, is I'm maybe one of the few people that doesn't object to paying taxes, but we can talk about that as well. My guest today is no stranger to the Peter Werby Show. He's Chuck Collins. He's been on the show any number of times before, and he is the man to go to when we start talking about wealth inequality and also taxes. Chuck is a senior scholar at the Institute for Policy Studies. He's the director of their program on inequality and the common good. You can go to extremeinequality.org, and they just have released a report for Tax Day called Shifting Responsibility, How 50 Years of Tax Cuts Have benefited America's Wealthiest Taxpayers, and that is at wealthforcommongood.org. If that's all way too much, don't get an accident. If you're driving, it'll all be on my website, Peter Werby, WERBE.com. Right now, it's a pleasure to welcome back to my show Chuck Collins. We reach him at his office in Boston. Welcome back, Chuck. How is everything going? Welcome back to your hometown, eh?
Thank you, Peter. It's always good to be talking and being in Detroit, imagining being in Detroit.
Well, taxes. It's interesting. One of the things I've seen on a lot of right-wing sites, they're all saying nobody pays taxes. Half of the U.S. Households don't even pay any federal income tax. So it's all these freeloaders paying it all, where you and I, the average law-abiding tax person, the middle-class person, is, you know, shouldering the load for these freeloaders. What's going on here?
Well, it is true that when we talk about the federal income tax, meaning that it's gotten to the point, this is a good thing, that half the households, and some of those are households with incomes up to $50,000 with two kids, say, don't pay any federal income taxes. They still pay their Social Security and Medicare. They pay all their state and local taxes. They pay other federal excise taxes. So they're taxpayers, but they and that's a good thing. The reality is that the other forms of taxes are more regressive, meaning the lower income you are, the higher percentage of your income you pay.
Sure.
And so the fact that the federal income tax is progressive and has some relief for low and middle income households is a good thing.
Part of the what lends itself to resentment, I'm beginning to find that more and more when talking to people, is that that sort of arbitrary cutoff. So if you're making like $49,900 and you have two kids, you might not pay any federal income tax. And if you make $50,000, you're paying. So you wind up with this resentment on people that aren't that don't have advantage of what may be a tax exemption from the government or a federal program or a state program where you just, you know, there's this kind of gray area.
Yeah. Well, I think it's just important to say, look, we're all taxpayers. Low and middle income people pay a much higher percentage of their income on sales taxes, property taxes, state income taxes, the payroll tax, right? The wealthier you are, the smaller percentage of your income you pay in payroll tax, because there's a cap on how much payroll with Social Security gets taken out of your paycheck. It's also if you're.
Well, wait, let's put some numbers on that. So if you're making $104,000, you pay your FICA taxes, your Social Security, Medicare taxes. But if you're making $21 million, what happens?
You just pay withholding on your first $104,000.
Yeah, and then you're exempt.
So if I'm, you know, if let's say I'm, you know, I earn $10 million a year as the CEO of a company, I'm done paying my Social Security withholding, lunchtime on January 5th or January 6th. Whereas if I'm a nurse and I'm working all, and I'm paying all the way till December 31st. So that's one of the ways in which the tax code is tipped in favor of the wealthy. So to me, it's okay. If it's tipped in favor of, and it's not just low-income people. I mean, if you earn $50,000, you're in the solid middle and probably should get more tax relief given both the expenses of life and the other taxes that you're paying.
Well, now, so, I'm sorry, go ahead, finish the thought.
Well, that's the thing. If you just look at state and local taxes, like, say, in Michigan, probably the bottom fifth, the lowest income fifth, is paying 11-12% of their income in state and local taxes, and the top, the richest fifth, are paying 6 or 7%. So it all washes out. We actually have a flat tax if you include all taxes. So if you're just talking about the income tax, and this is the point that you're going to hear, oh, there's all these freeloaders because they don't pay the federal income tax. But that's just one of many, many taxes.
Well, your recently released study, Shifting Responsibility, How 50 Years of Tax Cuts Have Benefited Americans, America's wealthiest taxpayers. We always think of Richie Rich Kid scamming off, not paying anything. But we come to learn that the top 10% of earners, which are households making an average of $366,400 in 2006, paid 73% of all the income taxes collected by the federal government. So this sounds like these guys are paying, and women now, of course, are paying this extraordinary sector of what the government collects.
Well, it's true. And what's interesting, though, is that all that reflects is how unequal we've become in the last 30 years. It didn't used to be that way. The wealthiest 10% earn over 70%. Closer to 80% of all the income.
Well, there you go.
So
that evens it out, doesn't it?
That wealthiest 70% owns almost 70%, 80% of all private wealth, own more than that, closer to 90% of all stock. So the top 10% really does occupy a different universe. So they're paying a portion of their income, and it happens that they contribute more toward the overall tax pie. Again, we're just talking about federal income tax. They pay a large share of that. If we looked at all the taxes that are collected at the state and local level and everything else, it's actually relatively flat. Everybody pays about 30% of their income in state, local, and federal taxes. And that includes like the tax on the soda, the tax on the gas pump, the tax on, the auto excise tax. You add them all up and you look at who pays what. We effectively, across from rich to poor, have about this almost an equal bite.
Now, you sure don't hear that very often. That's great information to get. Chuck Collins is my guest on the Peter Werbe Show. He's senior scholar at the Institute for Policy Studies, and he's the director of the program on inequality and the common good. Now, this study that's just been released, Shifting Responsibility, how 50 years of tax cuts have benefited America's wealthiest taxpayers. Sounds like the key information is just in the title. Can you flesh that out some for us, though?
Yeah, I think what we're trying to do is look at a little bit of the history. Gore Vidal says we're the United States of amnesia sometimes, and we forget what happened even a generation ago or two generations ago. And there's a big debate right now about, well, should we provide additional tax relief for middle-income families? Should we raise taxes on the wealthy? What we found is if you go back to 1960 and if you think about what's happened since then, we have President Kennedy who cut taxes substantially. President Ronald Reagan, major focus on cutting taxes, tax reform. George W. Bush, the second Bush presidency, substantial tax cuts. What's amazing to me is that the households in the middle fifth, pay the same percentage of their income in federal taxes as they did in 1960. So even after 50 years of talking about tax reform, that middle is paying about the same, pay just a little bit more than they did in 1960.
Well, I was going to say, I don't ever remember my parents saying, boy, we got a lot more money now that we've had the Kennedy tax cuts, or that anybody said now, and middle-class people I know, they say, oh, boy, we got all these Reagan tax cuts, certainly not the Bush tax cut. I remember it was supposed to affect all of us. I don't remember getting a dime more.
That's the irony. It's like all this, so we all get all whipped up by these politicians. Oh, tax reform, tax cuts. But in fact, not much has changed except for the wealthy. So in that same period over the last 50 years, if you were in the top 1/1,000th of the richest Americans, right, people with average incomes of $7 million, right? Income, not wealth. Your income is over $7 million. Those folks, since 1960, have seen the percentage of their income they pay in taxes cut in half.
Hmm.
And if you're in the super uber rich, the richest 400 families in America, you've seen your taxes go down by 2/3. Over. So all this talk about tax relief has delivered big time. The richer you are, the more relief you've gotten. And the middle has basically stayed the same.
Well, you remember there was this dinner George W. Bush was at, and he jokingly said something about the ultra-rich, and he said, you're my base. And so the idea has always been put forth that these presidents represent the interests of the ultra-rich. They don't represent the middle-class or working-class people, certainly not the poor. But it doesn't even seem to make sensible policy. In other words, these are people that don't need any tax relief, and even if we raise their taxes considerably. It wouldn't affect their lifestyle or their capacity to consume both commodities and politicians. So I don't know, what is the driving force there? That, I mean, if they really cut it on us, the middle class, not only would we love them, we would actually be able to spend a lot more money in the economy. So what drives this insanity?
Well, I mean, in some ways, it was the economic theory, the idea that if you cut taxes on the wealthy, and I'm essentially saying for 50 years, this has been the theory, you cut taxes on the wealthy, and it's going to be invested in a way that's going to create greater productivity and jobs. But as you just pointed out, I think we're actually, we gave, you know, a half a century of tax cuts to the wealthy, and in the last decade, we, you know, went on this speculative binge. A lot of that money didn't get invested in the real productive economy. A lot of it went into the casino gambling economy of speculative investments and hedge funds and all that. So we actually are better off giving tax relief to, you know, the bottom 95%, who will then spend that money or save, but spend that money in the local economy that will actually stimulate the real economy. We're better off from an economic point of view doing that. And instead, you know, and just even just thinking now about the last 10 years, under President George W. Bush, we borrowed $700 billion so we could give households with incomes over $250,000 a tax cut. Or we basically, you know, 2001 passed a tax cut that cost us $700 billion, just added it right to the debt. That tax cut actually expires at the end of this year. And so if Congress does not act, taxes will go up on households with incomes over $250,000. I think that's a good thing, because if it stayed in place over the next 10 years, it would cost another $800 billion. So and this is going to get added to the debt. It's essentially saying we're not going to tax ourselves. We're just going to ask our kids to pick up the bill for tax cuts for the wealthy.
Because not just paying back, there's also all this debt service, because we got some folks holding our IOUs, right?
With interest.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Same with corporations. I mean, small businesses are paying their taxes, but these big global companies game the system and are professional tax dodgers. You know, Exxon paid no taxes last year.
Wait a minute. They just raked in the highest income of any corporation in the history of the world. And they paid no taxes?
They paid no taxes.
How did they get away with that?
They lobby for massive tax loopholes. They have overseas subsidiaries, you know, like in tax haven countries like the Grand Cayman Islands. Not that I've ever been there, but I just hear it's a little sandbar in the Caribbean. And they pretend that they're making all their profits over there at their subsidiary, and they're writing off all their losses here in the United States. And lo and behold, they don't owe any taxes. I mean, you think about some of these companies, ExxonMobil and others, how much they benefit from not only the fact, you know, we have a standing army and an infrastructure over which they transport their products, but they benefit enormously from the expenditures, how we spend our tax dollars.
Sure.
But they're not contributing anything to the common pot. So, you know, we don't have to raise taxes on the middle class. We just simply have to close up all these loopholes in the short term. That will be an enormous step in the right direction.
Well, Chuck Collins is my guest on the Peter Wervey Show. He's a senior scholar at the Institute for Policy Studies. You can go to extremeinequality.org and get a lot of this data. Also, the brand new study, Shifting Responsibility, How 50 Years of Tax Cuts Have Benefited America's Wealthiest Taxpayers. That's at wealthforcommongood.org. And my website, peterwervey.com, will get you all that information as well. And I will repeat this at the end of our broadcast. Now, I said earlier that I didn't object to paying taxes, whereas I could imagine people going, what? Are you crazy? Nobody likes to pay taxes. Well, I mean, I've often said on these broadcasts that I think that we could probably have a $50,000 tax deduction right off the bat for every American, so that only, you know, if you made $55,000, you'd be paying taxes on $5,000, but we'd have to rejigger the tax system and also what we expend. Is what I'm talking about pie in the sky, or is it possible?
No, it's totally possible. I mean, we could just reverse some of the tax shifts that have happened over the last couple of decades, and we could have the system that you're talking about. I mean, as you said at the outside of the show, households with incomes up, you know, close to $50,000, some of them, because they have children, because they have medical expenses over a certain level, may not be paying a federal income tax. But your provocative statement there, that you don't mind paying taxes, what's interesting is there's a lot of people out there who actually share your sentiment. No, nobody likes to pay taxes, like, as, you know, it's not like favorite activity up there with, like, going out for ice cream, but a lot of people recognize it's the price you pay to live in a healthy, civilized society, and that the countries that don't have a functioning tax system where they can't collect the revenue to then make the fundamental expenditures on transportation, water treatment facilities, you know, you name it, environmental protection, education, community colleges. If they can't do that, things really unravel. The potholes just get bigger and bigger. So healthy, functioning societies have effective, efficient tax systems.
Yeah, sort of not wanting to pay taxes is sort of like wanting to go in a store and get an iPod for free. I it's all a nice dream, but it would be like saying, taking your kid to elementary school, and they say, okay, that'll be $1,500 for the semester. Or the police come to your house because your alarm went off when it wasn't supposed to, and they say, okay, that'll be $150, you know. it's part of what you're paying to live in this society. Now, are there expenditures made by the government that drive me and other people crazy, as some politician says? You betcha. And that has to be addressed politically. That doesn't have to do with so much the taxes or the tax structure, tax policy. To some extent it does, but that's in the, you know, what we have to decide as a society, how we're going to spend money, right?
That's right. I mean, we have always, as a country, had a debate about the size and proper role of government. You know, some people say, I don't like this function, or I don't like this, or I don't want government to be involved with health care, or whatever. You know, we have a political system where we duke it out over that. Then we have this other system of how do we pay for the things that we all struggle and agree or we need to have. And that's a whole other part of it. And what we've seen is the tax system keeps getting more and more regressive, meaning it's shifting the tax obligations onto the middle. And we are not, you know, after World War II, I think of my father's generation, you know, growing up in the Detroit area, the GI Bill for education, the Veterans Administration mortgages, we taxed ourselves in the 50s and 60s and 70s. At much higher and much more progressive rates, we raised revenue and invested it in things that built shared prosperity, that helped build the middle class.
Sure.
It just didn't appear out of nowhere. Access to home ownership was key. Access to debt-free college education was key. Today, we have young people go to college and graduate with $100,000 of college debt. Where are we going here? What kind of society are we building? So,
well, we could either spend it on free university tuition for everyone, or free university study for everyone, or we could get another B something bomber, which we don't need.
Yeah.
But Lockheed has. Yeah, go ahead.
Get in there and debate that in the political process, and say this is a bad use or this is inefficient, and press. You know, there's no substitute for democracy. There's no substitute for citizen engagement when it comes to these matters. The idea that we're all just going to withdraw and say, oh, I just want to keep my tax dollars and I don't want to have to, all these politicians are all corrupt and, you know, there's nothing. That's kind of like withdrawing and you get what you pay for and you get what you're involved with, and we will get a much more dysfunctional, uncivilized society if we keep going that way.
Sure, and it to kind of extend the aphorism that you just put forth, politically, you get what you deserve, and if you're a passive observer, hoping that a good elite does you better than a bad elite, depending on what your politics are, you can just spend the rest of your life hoping. Like, you hope that your medical test comes back negative or it doesn't rain on the day of your daughter's wedding. But to be actively involved in making history, I mean, particularly at critical points in the history of this country, that you would think that all citizens, rather than these small photogenic segments of society that get so much play now, would be involved in a great effort to reshape the society along the lines that you, the listener, would think. And there's groups. I mean, I'm not much of an advocate for all sides, but, and I have some pretty distinct politics, but to be involved in the creating visions of this society in a manner that we think would work best for us seems to be critical. And yet there's so much passivity.
There's things that are happening around this Tea Party movement that actually I think are good impulses, and there's things that are that I would disagree with them, but just, you know, is the middle class getting more and more squeezed? Yes. Are we sacrificing our children's future? Yes. Are the middle classes overtaxed? Yes. Where I would disagree is, you know, is President Obama evil? Well, actually, I think corporations. Wall Street has captured Republican and Democrat, and I think Obama is actually pushing back harder than Bush did. But in fact, we need a government to be on our side, to fight for Main Street and, you know, working families, and not just caving into Wall Street. So it's not just Obama. It's 30 years of control by large corporations.
Well, we're almost
there's a lot in that Tea Party movement that is people, many people who haven't been involved politically saying, I'm mad. And it's the real question is, where do we channel that anger? Sure. I would argue, let's use some of that anger to reverse the great tax shift.
Well, it's about 74% Republicans in the Tea Parties, understandably. But there's also like a coffee party movement, and there's also things like the United States Social Forum that's going to be happening in Detroit June 22nd through the 26th. And this could be from a different perspective. You can go to my website, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com, and find out about the United States Social Movement. Chuck Collins has been my guest, and the organization, which is Wealth for the Common Good, has just published a study, Shifting Responsibility, How 50 Years of Tax Cuts Have Benefited America's Wealthiest Taxpayers. All the information at wealthforcommongood.org. And also, Chuck Collins, you can go to extremeinequality.org. Chuck is the senior scholar at the Institute for Policy Studies. Chuck, thanks so much for being on the show, and I hope to see you at the U.S. Social Forum.
Thanks, Peter. Thanks for the conversation.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
It all starts with having a good pre-screened group of contractors to choose from. And Hire It Done is your one-stop guide to finding the one that's right for your home improvement project. Hi, I'm Adam Helfman, host of WRIF's Hire It Done. Before you start your day's home improvement tasks around your house, grab a cup of hot coffee and tune us in Saturday mornings from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Join us this weekend. They're here, those pesky carpenter ants. We'll help you get their homes out of your home's walls. Are your gutters clear for optimal performance? And your attic, what's really going on up there?
Also, spring is moving season. Hire a Done gives you the do's and don'ts for a successful home transition. Plus, we'll discuss the latest in short sales. If you know someone who is upside down in their mortgage, you need to tune into my show this Saturday where I have Will Elias, the short sale expert at 877-CALL-WILL, and he's going to discuss everything you need to know about short sales and the latest news on loan modifications. Plus, I'll take your house calls live. All this Saturday beginning at 7 a.m. on Hire a Done and 101 WRIF, The Rib.
Are you struggling with too much credit card debt, sky-high interest rates, late fees, over-limit fees, having trouble just making the monthly minimums? We can help. We're Credit Card Relief. We've helped thousands of people become debt-free in months instead of years, all while saving thousands of dollars and without risking your family home. No, this isn't bankruptcy. It isn't one of those credit counseling deals or a high-interest consolidation loan. We're Credit Card Relief. We've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. We're an attorney-driven program with an outstanding record of performance and client satisfaction. If you're serious about getting out of debt, call Credit Card Relief right now. Don't wait for the collection calls to start. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Call 866-290-8282. 866-290-8282. That's 866-290-8282. Did you know the tap water in your home may be hazardous? Not to your health, but to your appliances and your wallet. Your home's hard water creates pipe clogging line scale, and that can shorten the life of your water heater, ruin your dishwasher, and break down your washing machine. Lime scale deposits block the heating element, and that could be costing you an extra $1,200 a year in energy and wear. But you can remove lime scale without chemicals, magnets, or salts. It's easy with HydraCare, the patented device used worldwide. See for yourself at bestsoftwater.com. You simply clip HydraCare to your main water pipe. HydraCare removes and prevents limescale buildup in your entire plumbing system. If your home has hard water, extend the life of your appliances with HydraCare. Try it risk-free. Just go to bestsoftwater.com. That's bestsoftwater.com. Or call now. 888-883-8187. That's 888-883-8187.
101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
My dad is my hero. He goes into burning buildings. He finds people inside who need to be saved. He helps them get out, even when he can't breathe or see or is a little scared. My dad is a firefighter, but the best thing he can do is come home.
The U.S. Fire Administration reminds you to protect yourself and firefighters. Have smoke alarms on every level and near sleeping areas. Test them monthly. Change batteries as instructed. Install sprinklers. Do your part to get out before firefighters have to come in. The fact is, most fire deaths occur in homes with no working smoke alarms. The good news is, that's a fact we can change. Smoke alarms save lives. Find out more at usfa.dhs.gov.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much. Peter Werby here with you. I appreciate you joining me for a conversation about healthcare and the front line of healthcare, and that's nursing. We've discussed and talked and argued and agreed and speculated and worried and hoped and what have you, all that healthcare will bring us in its new form. But one form that remains and has been around for a very, very long time is the role of nursing. Suzanne Gordon has been on my program before. She is a visiting professor at the University of Maryland School of Nursing and assistant adjunct professor at the University of California. And in the School of Nursing there. She's the author of Life Support, and we last spoke to her when she authored Nursing Against the Odds, and she's also co-authored a number of books as well. This one's called When Chicken Soup Isn't Enough, Stories of Nurses Standing Up for Themselves, Their Patients, and Their Profession. It's a pleasure to welcome back Suzanne Gordon to the Peter Werby Show, and we're reaching you in Baltimore, are we not?
Yes, I'm actually doing an event at the University of Maryland School of Nursing because four of the five of the authors of the essays in the book are at the University of Maryland School of Nursing. Two are professors and three were students of mine, and they're working nurses, and they contributed essays or very short stories to this book, which is kind of, I conceptualize as an anti-Chicken Soup for the Nurse's Soul book, because the Chicken Soup for the Soul books are very saccharine, and you know, they depict nurses as kind of sugar and spice and everything nice, as praying for their patients, as fretting for their patients, as holding their patients' hands, sometimes believing in ghosts, and, you know, but what they don't depict is nurses really fighting for their patients and fighting for themselves and fighting for healthcare. And I really had this feeling that this Chicken Soup narrative really didn't capture accurately the work nurses do, and it gave the wrong message to nurses who, you know, nurses have a really hard time talking about what they do, even the excellent things that they do, and they have a really hard time fighting for themselves, and they have a really hard time making it clear to people what they do and why it's so important. And so I think that a lot of these kind of saccharine inspirational kinds of volumes that are directed to nurses really reinforce this passive stance, self-silencing stance that nurses have. It's kind of the literary equivalent, if you don't have something nice to say, don't talk.
Well, Suzanne Gordon, let me back you up a bit. I mean, as you spoke, all of a sudden about 36 questions occurred to me. The first one is that maybe we ought to acquaint people, including myself, a little more with this Chicken Soup for the Soul phenomenon. Now, that's a best-selling book or series of books that I've never looked at and doesn't seem like my kind of book. So, and I can tell that it sort of raised your hackles, and you kind of explained why. But give us kind of a broad outline of what those are all about.
Well, I think it's, I mean, I don't really know the whole history, but there are these, they have this series with just, I don't know, hundreds, but dozens of books that basically, they're sort of celebrating, inspiring, you know, so it's Chicken Soup for Teacher's Soul, Chicken Soup for the Caregiver's Soul, Chicken Soup for the Nurse's Soul. And they're basically a collection of stories from people that people have written themselves that they solicit. And the kinds of stories that they have are really, I mean, in the case of nurses, are very sugar and spice and everything nice stories. So they're sort of short snippet stories. And so what I did is I said, well, what about when chicken soup isn't enough?
Right.
What about when you really have to fight? What about when you really have to take risks? You know, why don't we celebrate that? What about when we fight and we don't win? You know,
mm-hmm.
Nurses really, they talk a lot about the nurse as the patient advocate, but the Chicken Soup for the Soul books really, the advocacy that these nurses do, if you could call it that, is really sort of like, well, I really wish you well, you know, and I'm out of here. Right? I mean, or I really wish you well. And
well, let me ask you a little about your subtitle. Actually, it popped out at me, and I'm beginning to see, you know, the direction of this book. The book is edited by Suzanne Gordon, a collection of stories by nurses. The title is When Chicken Soup Isn't Enough. It's published by Cornell Press. And the subtitle is Stories of Nurses Standing Up for Themselves, Their Patients, and Their Profession. And did you choose the order of that? In other words, I would have thought they would have said Stories of Nurses Standing Up for Their Patients, Their Professions, and Themselves, yet you have themselves first.
Yeah, and I did that very deliberately because nurses are always exhorted to sacrifice themselves for their patients, and they do. I think they are told to sacrifice way too much, and I think that any kind of professional work, and certainly nursing, involves a dose of self-sacrifice. I mean, you know, if a patient's having a cardiac arrest, you can't just, you know, say, I'm sorry, I'm, you know, busy chatting with my friend here. But nurses are asked, you know, I mean, all over, you know, I mean, to go, their home care nurses, to go into the homes of patients who are dangerously mentally ill with no protection. They're asked to, in hospitals, to take care of 16 patients and never take a bathroom break and risk incontinence and urinary retention. And they're asked to lift patients who were 300 pounds without any lift equipment and thus have more back, neck, and shoulder injuries than construction workers. They're asked to not go home and take care of their kids. They're asked to stay at home and be on call. You know, school nurses are asked to take care of, you know, 1,700 kids and somehow make sure they're all healthy. And it compromises not just patient care, but it compromises their own health. And I really feel very strongly that nurses have to stand up for themselves, because in most cases, when you stand up for yourself, you're standing up for patient care. I mean, if you're standing up for no lift for lift equipment, so you're not asked. I mean, I was once at a hospital where a call came out for nurses to volunteer to lift an 800-pound patient. I mean, I'm not making this up. I mean, I in healthcare, you know, you couldn't make it up. I mean, I don't know, you'd have to be Stephen King or something. And I mean, a combination of Stephen King and Woody Allen. That would be interesting.
Well, you got the last guy, you got me laughing, but go ahead.
So it's really, you know, I think nurses really need to learn when to say no, because often when they say yes, it's dangerous for your patients. I mean, one of the stories in the book is about a nurse who's a leader of an SEIU local in Miami, Florida, and they fought at their hospital for lift equipment for patients so that the nurses weren't getting all these neck, shoulder, and back injuries. But, you know, getting lift equipment, proper lift equipment, you know, mechanical lifts, which are readily available, and they have them in Europe and Australia and other places, this lift equipment pays for itself in about 2 years in, you know, reduction in workers' comp claims. And but if the nurse is about to hurt herself, you know, she's probably going to hurt the patient, because if she can't lift properly, she shears their skin, you know, as she drags them along, and that creates bed sores, or they could fall. So, you know, these are cases in which what's good for the nurse is good for the patient, and I think nurses really have to assert that, and they also have to assert the principle that you shouldn't have to become a patient in the course of caring for patients. And we know that nurses suffer from more depression, more stress-related illnesses, as I said, you know, the back, neck, and shoulder injuries.
Well, I was going to insert that, because I could imagine listeners saying, well, wait a minute, this author, she's saying that the nurse is not going to be sacrificing, not going to be giving up, and you know, more than an ordinary person would, you know, Florence Nightingale and all that. But you list here that nurses have a higher rate of mortality, suicide, stress-related disease, psychiatric illness, physical illness than the general population, and also suffer, and this is what we were talking about here, musculoskeletal injuries on the job than workers in mining and construction. So
absolutely, and I think that, no, what I am not saying to the listener who is a patient, like I'm a patient, you know, when you ring the buzzer and the nurse is talking to her daughter, she says, you know, wait a minute, you can have a cardiac arrest in another 15 minutes. I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying is, yes, nurses sacrifice. Yes, nurses are professionals. They put the patient first. But they are asked to do things that are dangerous for the patient and themselves. You know, if in the state of Michigan, the Michigan Nurses Association is fighting for safe staffing in hospitals. And several of the stories in the book, When Chicken Soup Isn't Enough, are about the struggles for safe staffing. That's, you know, limiting the number of patients that a nurse can take care of for patient safety. And that's been won because nurses said, you know, wait a minute, this is a when chicken soup isn't enough moment. And they fought for staffing ratios, safe staffing legislation in California and in the state of Victoria and Australia. And basically, everybody who's a listener should understand that it is not safe for you in a hospital if a nurse is taking care of, you know, five other patients or eight other patients or 16 other patients. You know, that is not safe, because do you want to be the 12th patient of a nurse on the 12th hour of her 12-hour shift? I don't think so.
Yeah.
You know, you want to be the third patient or maybe the fourth patient if you're not that sick. But so when nurses stand up for themselves, they are standing up for their patients. They're not asking for staffing ratios because they're lazy and they want to do less work. They're asking for staffing ratios because they recognize that, you know, you cannot be in eight different places at a time.
And I know, Suzanne Gordon, that the other books that you've written that we've talked about, that studies show that for every patient over four in a nurse's care, that means the patient's risk of death increases. And you list that nurse staffing issues, in other words, too many patients as it relates to single nurse, are held responsible for 50% of ventilator-related deaths, 42% of surgery-related deaths, 25% of transfusion errors, and on. I mean, we're talking about critical care in many cases, and to have somebody having to balance that many people is...
I mean, there's a great story in the book about a school nurse in, I think it was Kansas, or Missouri, and I'm bad at this. There's 73 of these stories in the book, so forgive me, but this wonderful school nurse named Kathy Hupka, they were, the principal in her district, they were threatening to cut the number of school nurse positions, and so she said, well, do you have any kids in your school who have epilepsy? You know, because kids today have epilepsy, right? And they come to school, which is great. And he said, yes. And she said, well, you know that we're going to have somebody administer rectal Valium to this kid if he has a seizure. And so if there's not going to be a school nurse doing that, I guess you'd like to do it. And suddenly he said, oh, you know, I just remember that money in my budget. And, you know, there's just all kinds of stories of nurses. And the stories show what nurses are up against. I mean, one of the stories is told by a nurse in Seattle, Washington, who was a nurse manager and was trying to get the neurologist on her unit to meet with the nurses to talk about critical patient safety issues, and she could never get them to come to this meeting, and she would assign a time and they would never show up. And so she was talking to one of them, and he said, well, we're not going to show up at this meeting because we have another meeting at my house where we do once a month discussions of journal articles, and we're not going to meet there and then meet here, you know, sorry. So she said, okay, when is this meeting happening? And she basically invited herself to the meeting and started attending this meeting in order to get these guys to listen to the nurses. And after about 8 months or so, she got them to listen to nurses and to listen to nursing issues. And it's a great story. But on the one hand, you have to wonder, why did she have to
fight? Why did she have to fight?
Why did she have to fight? Because a lot of these stories, which are wonderful, and they show how nurses fight and how clever they are, but the real question I left it with is, why does it have to be so hard?
Well, let's talk a little about some of the more of the stories in When Chicken Soup Isn't Enough, stories of nurses standing up for themselves, their patients, and their profession. Now, you got over 70 stories. How does one collect all those? And are they all gripe stories? I mean, they're all just people?
Oh, not at all. No. And there's some of them are, I wouldn't call these gripes. I mean, to be an advocate means that you have to stand up and make an argument. So they're all stand-up stories. They're all making an argument stories. They're all doing something active stories. And what I'm really thrilled about is, I mean, what I did was I basically put out a call. I asked everybody I knew. I asked organizations, you know, and the number of different kinds of nurses are amazing. I mean, there's critical care nurses, you know, one woman who was the president of the American Association of Critical Care Nurses, Connie Barton, who's also in Florida, told the story of when she was dealing with a patient who was was dying, and the family wanted to talk about end-of-life care, and this was when doctors really weren't talking frankly about end-of-life care to patients, and she took a tremendous risk because she addressed these issues when she knew that she could, you know, potentially get called on it, and she basically did and basically had a conversation with the doctor about, you know, how, look, we need to be honest with these patients. Their stories, some of the stories are from nurses in other countries. There's a great story from a nurse in New Zealand who discovered that the Maori patients were very upset because the hospital johnnies, the hospital kind of nightgowns, you know, they flap open in the back and they leave them exposed. And so basically what she did was she developed a kind of sarong-like garment that they could wear that would make them more comfortable and piloted this, and you know, you'd think this would.
Wait. That's funny because in the Maori culture, they when they want to insult somebody, they moon them like they famously, a long time ago, mooned Queen Elizabeth the Second. So
right.
the idea that their butt is hanging out is you know, probably something. Hey, by the way, Suzanne Gordon, I wanted to say I didn't mean to diminish the what is being said here by saying it was gripes. I was using a shorthand. This is critical to what almost all of us are going to face at one time. It's critical to a profession of people that are in what's going to be pretty soon expanding fairly quickly. And I want to go on to that. You list the average age of the nurse today as 46, yet in the next 4 years or so, we're going to be putting tens of millions of people more into the hospital and medical systems, and already we're talking about a bad nurse-to-patient ratio.
I mean, I think that the message of this book, which is that you've got to stand up, that you've got to fight for what you need, is really apt now because, and the role models in the book are really apt, and particularly for new nurses and younger nurses, and for even older nurses who are getting tired and worn down, and it's like, oh, you know, I need some chicken soup here, or I've had enough, you know. And because I think that the Obama healthcare legislation is, you know, a very good beginning, but it's certainly not an end point. And one of the big questions I have is if we're adding 31 million people into the mix, you know, finally having insurance coverage, many of them have not had it, so they don't have good preventive care, they don't have good health maintenance, they haven't gotten primary care. So that means that many of these people will have illnesses or that they didn't need to have in the first place, or their illnesses will be much worse than they should have been if they'd had decent care and decent help. So that means that a lot of people are going to go into hospitals and need home care and that kind of thing. And the question is, who's going to give it to them? And so, you know, we're putting more money. I mean, the legislation is very complicated, but on one hand, you know, presumably hospitals won't have to cover so much uncompensated care, but not that many did anymore. And, you know, so there will be some cuts in Medicare funding. And so the question really will be, will there be money put in the system to hire more nurses, or will the same amount of nurses be asked to do even more than they're being asked to do now? So nurses are really going to have to prepare to you know, to stand up for themselves. I mean, insurance companies are preparing to stand up for themselves by hiking premiums, you know. Municipalities are worried about this so-called Cadillac tax, which is really a tragedy and a travesty, and they're preparing. So I think nurses really have to prepare for more stand-up activity because they need to be able to say, you know, you've got to hire more nurses. We've got to start producing more nurses. We need more money for nursing education. There is money in the system for primary care and advanced practice nurses and nurse practitioners to provide primary care, but we need people, you know, in direct care, in hospitals, in homes, in nursing homes, in rehab hospitals, and so forth. And because, you know, the good news is people will be cared for. The bad news is we don't have enough people to care for them.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned stories in your book cook when chicken soup isn't enough, how in Michigan and in California, nurses' unions collectively talked to the hospital administrations about issues there, including patient to nurse ratio. If you're just an individual nurse, it's quite a bit more difficult. And I know you're an advocate of unionization of nurses, yet 20% of the RN workforce belong to a union, which, given these days, isn't too bad. But there seems to be both nursing and nursing students resistant to unionization. You think that's going to change?
You know, they buy this nonsense that unions are for auto workers and truck drivers, forgetting that journalists and movie stars and, you know, TV personalities are all in unions and that most of their colleagues in other countries are in unions.
And radio hosts.
Right, and radio hosts, yeah.
Okay,
My first union experience was belonging to when I was a commentator on CBS, and I joined the American Federation of Television and Radio Artists. And I have to tell you that, you know, I was not worried about my professional street cred when I got better health care benefits, you know. So I think that most nurses don't understand American labor law, and they just don't understand the concept of being an employee at will, and that, a lot of people think that the First Amendment protects speech in the workplace, and it doesn't. And, you know, the only kind of activity that is protected is concerted activity, which means, you know, with one other person or in a collective. And I think nurses just don't get that, you know, hospitals aren't obliged to talk to them, and when they discipline them, that they aren't obliged to provide the books and the financial data when they say they can't afford lift equipment or more staff. I mean, I had a student who said that, you know, she felt insulted as a manager that she wasn't invited to join the union. And I mean, that would be laughable if it wasn't so tragic, you know, because managers aren't allowed by law to be in a union. So people are just woefully ignorant about what unions are, and it doesn't have anything to do with your class. You know, it has to do with, do you really want to be able to advocate for your patients? And if you're an employee at will, how can you advocate for patients if you could be fired without a just cause?
Sure. And I'm in, by the way, that same union that you were
after.
American Federation of Television and Radio Artists. We're almost out of time, Suzanne Gordon, and we need nurses, we need better conditions for nurses, we need better staffing ratios and all that. But I have to say bluntly that after our conversation, I would say, boy, I don't know if I'd want to go into nursing. I mean, if you got all that terrible, health impact and these anti-union hospitals and all that, maybe I'd look somewhere else.
Oh, don't. I mean, you're too old, Peter. I'm too old. But if you're a young person, or even if you're a middle-aged person, I mean, I never thought one of my kids would want to be a nurse, and she just came back from Rwanda where she worked with women infected with AIDS during the genocide. She wants to be a nurse, and I'm like rooting for her, and I know what all the problems are, but I think we need to have people going into the profession with eyes wide open as opposed to eyes tight shut, and who, you know, are, I mean, without sounding self-promotional, because it's not my book, it's the book of these 73 nurses who are, you know, reading a different kind of narrative, and it's the not the chicken soup narrative, it's the when chicken soup isn't enough narrative, it's the how do I stand up narrative, and you know, these 73 nurses are real role models of genuine patient advocacy at work, and it does work, you know. I mean, nursing is built on, you know, two millennium of struggle and hard work and acquiring knowledge, and you know, it's sort of like, well, what else is new? It's tough out there, you know.
It is. Well, I want to thank you so much for being with me, Suzanne Gordon, and for collecting these stories into when chicken soup isn't enough, stories of nurses standing up for themselves, their patients, and their profession, and how important all of that is. You can go to Suzanne's website. It's SuzanneGordon.com. SuzanneGordon.com. There'll be a link on my site, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Riff Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Join the Riff Zone Screamin' Scott Randall this Wednesday from noon to 2 p.m. at the 7-Eleven on 4th Street in Southgate. Stop by and register to win plenty of Riff prizes brought to you by Nestle Crunch and 101 WRIF, everything that rocks.
Do you know someone who always seems well-connected? Here's your chance to one-up that person and then some. Welcome to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com, your online connection to half off or more deals from tons of Metro Detroit businesses. Simply log on to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com for special online coupons and discounts you can't get anywhere else.
This week's featured deals are from Clancy's Irish Pub in Clinton Township.
All you have to do is visit MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com. You'll save time and money by shopping from the comfort of your computer. Heck, you don't even have to get dressed. No shirt, no shoes, no problem.
Shot naked, man. Yeah!
Dressed or not, just go to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com and you'll be connected to these incredible deals and more. MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com, man. Hey, like, this chair is really cold.
Dressed or not, just go to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com and you'll be connected to these incredible deals and more. MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
It all starts with having a good, pre-screened group of contractors to choose from. And Hire It Done is your one-stop guide to finding the one that's right for your home improvement project. Hi, I'm Adam Helfman, host of WRIF's Hire It Done. Before you start your day's home improvement tasks around your house, grab a cup of hot coffee and tune us in Saturday mornings from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Join us this weekend. They're here, those pesky carpenter ants. We'll help you get their homes out of your home's walls. Are your gutters clear for optimal performance? And your attic, what's really going on up there? Also, spring is moving season. Hire It Done gives you the do's and don'ts for a successful home transition. Plus, we'll discuss the latest in short sales. If you know someone who is upside down in their mortgage, you need to tune into my show this Saturday where I have Will Elias, the short sale expert at 877-CALL-WILL, and he's going to discuss everything you need to know about short sales and the latest news on loan modifications. Plus, I'll take your house calls live. All this Saturday beginning at 7 a.m. on Hire It Done and 101 WRIF, The Riff. Hire It Done.
Do you want a wireless laptop, but your credit score is holding you back? We can help. Guaranteed. If you have a bank account and can afford weekly payments of just $29.99 for 12 months, we'll send you a brand new wireless laptop, no matter what your credit looks like. Call Tronics Country now. You're approved for a brand new Dell or HP laptop. Call now and we'll also include a free MP3 player and free LCD TV with your paid order. Call 800-990-2258. Still not sure? Then hear what our customers say.
I'm really enjoying my laptop.
I just wanted to call to say how happy I am with it.
And I'm very pleased with their service, so I would suggest to anyone that is looking for computers or trying to find computers, Tronics is the best place to call.
Call now and lock in your free gifts. You will not be turned down. Call 800-990-2258. 800-990-2258. That's 800-990-2258.
101 The Riff.
Hey, Larry, mind if I sit down?
Nope.
This coffee tastes like coffee. So what's going on?
Not much.
What's new?
Not much.
Okay, but can you please put the newspaper down while you say not much?
What newspaper?
This newspaper. Oh, dude, what happened to your face? I see one, two,
ow,
three, four, five, six.
Ow.
Dude, what is
ow
this? 11 pieces of toilet paper stuck to your face?
I'm shaving in the dark to save energy. I'm helping the environment.
That's a dangerous way to help the environment.
Well, sometimes you have to sacrifice yourself for the greater good.
Dude, there's an easier and safer way to help the environment without sacrificing yourself. Go green, go public. Take public transportation. It's good for the environment and you won't have to live behind a newspaper.
Wow.
But for now, put the newspaper back up.
A message from the public transportation systems across the country. To learn more, visit publictransportation.org.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Did I mention the music rocks?
Everything that rocks.